everybody, and welcome to episode 571 of Video Game Apocalypse. I'm your host, Michael Raparez, coming to you from the Steve Roland Memorial Studio of the Airwaves.
If you want to be
the U Memorial Studio of the Airwaves, go to patreon.com/lasertime and join us at the $20 level, or just join us at the $5 level if you just want access to bonus shows. Who's joining me now?
Which extremely famous person coined the phrase, "A shark on whiskey is mighty risky. A shark on beer is a beer engineer"? That is my tribute to Space Ghost on his 30th anniversary. That was a question he asked Willie Nelson.
Wow.
All these wonderfully famous Oscar winners, Emmy winners, they just wasted their time. We talk about it on 30-2010, and I encourage you to check out the YouTube stream, which some of those episodes have like not been streamed outside of cable in years. And 30th anniversary, Space Ghost cracks me up. It's the beginning of not only Cartoon Network, but Adult Swim. Wonderful. It's the first original program for a Cartoon Network.
You have a long name.
Yeah,
dude.
Say your name.
No!
Say your name. Vault 33 Dweller Matthew Allen here.
All right. Chris Antisa and Matthew Allen.
30-2010. Listen to that. I don't care about
joining
my name.
Joining me. Nobody else. No guests this week. It's just a cozy show with us three. To talk about what? To talk about
Fallout.
Game movies that have been stuck in development hell forever.
In light of Fallout coming out, it did the every episode drop.
Yeah.
It's I don't like the Fallout games. I really like the show.
Yeah.
I really like the show so far.
Same here. You never liked a Fallout? You didn't even like 3?
No. Well,
I mean, I like the games. I love the show. But
3, I got
to Chris. Chris just said he didn't like Fallout. And I'm
3, it doesn't mean I hate
it's a
Fallout.
Fallout call out.
I never got into. I probably put like 30 hours across the franchise. I got into 3 late, but I bought everything else on launch day. Played for like a dozen hours, and like bored out of my fucking mind. Yeah, like that. But again, that's just me. I'm like that with a lot of Bethesda games. Like, it just, they never really scratch my itch. But I love the setting, and the setting is done real well in a different medium. And we were just looking at, well, what other properties tried to make the transition into this medium? Does there have to be some magical number that a property has to exist for 20 years before Hollywood will pay attention? I'd like to think Last of Us proved no.
Yeah, I think it's less a matter of has it been around long enough, but I think Hollywood kind of had this very derisive attitude toward video games. It's like, this is bullshit for 14-year-olds. Nobody cares if it's bad. Game stories are bad. They don't complain about that. And it's like, well, because we've got gameplay to prop up any shortcomings with the storytelling.
Right.
You need to compensate for that in a movie. And I think they're finally realizing that, like, if you put money behind this and talent and good writing and good acting, people will flock to it. People who don't care about the games will love it. Our parents will love it.
Fallout and Last of Us, I think, and Sonic are like recommendable movies to people who have never heard of the games.
Yes.
And that 10 years ago, no video game movie was worth recommending to anyone ever for any reason.
Not even fans.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like that's fucking nuts. And Fallout, I've never had the experience. I am not what you would call a fan of this franchise. I've always wanted to be. I always try to be. Never grabs me. So that show is great.
Yeah, that's actually key to, I'll explain how we got to this point, because I was planning to do like a list of, let's do like the best 5 Fallout games to play now. And then I realized like, I have only seriously played like 2 of these. So I was like giving myself a crash course in Fallout games. And then this morning, Chris is like, I don't like Fallout.
Let's
do something else. And so we were talking about
being kind enough in phrasing it. I'm not saying you're bad for liking it. I'm not shitting on the Fallout friend.
Yeah, no,
I love everything about the motif, the setting, the music, the design, just the gameplay, all that VAT shit, walking back and forth, the jank. It's always rubbed me the wrong. And New Vegas, I played at launch, just constantly crashed and broke my game. And I just gave up. And yeah, I don't know. I was nice to finally see that criticism about Starfield. Like, that's what I've been saying about these games for years. Walk here, walk there. slow, slow, slow conversation for an hour.
Yeah. But, you know, my point is, like, that probably would have made a kind of a bad show anyway, because I don't know 1, 2, or 4, or 76 all that
Assuming,
well.
And all of us have played 1 and 2 is a big,
stretch, not at all,
man.
Not at all.
Like, most people, when they think Fallout, starts at 3.
Those games are beautifully written. It takes a while to, you know, crack that nut and get to the meat inside.
Yeah.
Because there's very slow gameplay. But then we were talking about, like, oh, what if we did top 5 games? Based TV shows, and we were like, eh, and then you came up with...
Are we going to watch 2 seasons of Halo in the time it takes before we do the show?
No, but you came up with this Development Hell idea.
Yeah, because I think I've been an evangelist for the idea that, like, games are going to save streaming culture. They're like the last untapped huge franchise property. I only made that 20 years quote, not to be, if you want to call it cynical, maybe, but I know Hollywood likes a big brand. And to wait for something to be saturated by literally a billion people, it kind of takes time.
Yeah.
And if you want to dump...
When you were saying this around Witcher and Cyberpunk, I was kind of skeptical. But I feel like since then, we've seen so much quality. And, like,
yeah.
I think you've been proven right. That games have become, when done well, they're a very hot commodity.
Well, they were just, to me, the biggest IP that wasn't locked down by a corporation running a streaming service. They were up for grabs for everybody. And they still are, for the most part, until one of these companies ends up buying Microsoft or vice versa. So that was my motivation behind it. And, like, I think I could detail a lot of reasons why, but a lot of that is respect for your audience and that they know it's not a bunch of Nielsen families on NBC with commercial breaks who would rather be watching The Voice. They get to make kind of a different show. Mm-hmm. They're not there to necessarily hold bored passive eyeballs. They're trying to get millions, maybe billions of gamers signing up for their service. It's an interesting bet that regular television hasn't had to make until streaming. So but before that, we would have big, colossal game properties like, why don't they make a fucking movie out of that? And they, sure enough, I wrote news for a little while. They would announce a movie like every other week to the point where, like, are we going to write this story? I guarantee this isn't happening. This is not happening at all. Where is Dave Bautista's Gears of War? Where is it?
Oh, where indeed?
I'll tell you where. Netflix. Netflix commissioned a script in 2022.
Okay.
Not with Dave Bautista, but, you know, who I think it should be John DiMaggio. He's a big fucking guy. I think
he originated that role. So
yeah, even if you don't want to make the show about Marcus Fenix, he should be Marcus Fenix always in the background. He's kind of a silly character to base a story around, to be honest. Everyone else has a more compelling story.
Does he have much experience? Like, has he done live action stuff? I know him mostly as a voice actor.
The last time I saw him was in that Interview with a Vampire show, and he got his...
Oh, shit.
Half of his body ripped off and his entrails stretched along
forgotten about that.
Yeah, he does live action stuff all the time, yeah.
Hmm. Awesome.
He's presentable and huge.
No, I know. There's a physicality to it. I don't know. So games that have been, like, stuck in, they were greenlit, they were announced, they've been kicked around for years, they've kind of been quiet. Some of the ones that we're going to talk about supposedly have projects that are in the works as of maybe 2 years ago, and we'll talk about that, but I feel like the Mario movie
Matt was saying off mic that, like, Hollywood, more so than the game industry, is no stranger to announcing things that 20% chance this gets made, and just announce it, and who cares? Whereas games don't really do that. And I don't know that they'll do that much more in the future, because they need content desperately, so why not just move forward? But sorry, Mario movie.
I was going to say, like, the Mario movie, it's sort of a watershed, because I keep seeing it brought up in, like, oh, since the Mario movie did so well, like, there's interest now in doing big-budget video game adaptations. It proved that, like, this can be successful. And ironically, the 93 Mario movie was such a flop that it convinced Nintendo and other companies that, like, we should not license out our IP because it's gonna flop. It's gonna
can't trust these
the
Westerners.
Brand. Exactly.
God damn it. Can't trust them.
So you had a bad Mario movie and a good Mario movie, and both of them were, like, these watershed moments for video games.
Yeah, the Mario movie, Super Mario movie from last year, 2023, is the second highest grossing movie of the year, just behind Barbie, which everyone at Disney is probably getting fired. That just is hilarious to me. But I also predict, I don't think they're going to be able to make a franchise out of that. because I don't know what kind of cut Nintendo's taking from those films, but it made it's the third highest grossing Illumination movie. Like, the second Despicable Me prequel made about the same globally as the Mario movie, and they don't have to split that with Nintendo or deal with Nintendo. So I just wanted to bring that up because I think that Zelda live action movie they announced is poised for development hell. It's set up at a traditional studio with a very traditional producer. I don't see it ever happening.
Yeah, I would be surprised. And it just, I don't feel like Zelda really lends itself that well to an adaptation because so much of those games is what you project onto the hero. I would have said the same thing about Halo, though. And that's apparently doing okay.
I don't know. I think Halo's got at least action going for it, where Zelda isn't about action. It's about discovery and puzzles, which don't translate well to fucking movies. That's not what you do in movies. But I could be wrong, because the last Dungeons & Dragons movie was pretty okay.
Yeah.
If you didn't see it. It was pretty
that's
good.
That's true.
And I'd say the same thing about that.
Maybe they build it out into an ensemble cast, and they have Link and Zelda and a little fairy, and Link is played by Steve Martin and says,
"Excuse me, princess."
A lot.
And I predict Jack Black will be the Cliff Clavin to every video game movie. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to put
Jack Black is Error, and he tags around with Link at all times.
Hey, listen! Hey!
It could be Navi. Why not? All right. Well, let's just get into our list with...
Number 5.
Sounds like we need a plan B.
We're waiting for word from headquarters.
Forget it. There's no time.
Wallace's orders. We've got to wait.
It's okay. Wallace and I have an understanding. He gives orders, and I break them. Is there another way in?
Well, there's the sewer. It leads into the property.
On second thought, maybe we should wait for headquarters.
If I told you this was Spy Hunter, would you
Where's
believe
the theme
me?
From Peter Gunn? Yeah, isn't that? Ding, 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 ding. Was this? So there's been a lot of pictures of The Rock circulating around the interwebs lately, and it's hilarious because there's clearly a phase where he is off cycle on his chemical enhancements, and this may be during that phase where he just looks like kind of a normal dude who's goes to the gym a lot. Like,
yeah, and he still had hair.
That has been fascinating. Now that The Rock was back in WWE recently, and they kept showing old footage of him, like, should we be worried how much larger he is than when he was wrestling full time? He is so grotesquely bigger.
Like every 10 years you're supposed to sort of lose a few percentage of muscle mass just as a natural part of aging, and he's gone the opposite direction, like way the opposite.
Yeah, why'd you get that? You didn't get that jacked for Vince McMahon, and you did it for the nanny, the tooth fairy. What are you doing?
He's like the anti Baron Harkonnen or something. Like,
exactly. Matt, look that up.
More and more jacked. You saw Dune?
Laugh and nod, Chris. That's what I always do.
You guys saw Dune. Shut the fuck up.
I did.
That guy. Yeah.
But I thought for years that this movie, that the Spy Hunter movie, Spy Hunter Nowhere to Run was the 2006 game. I thought for years that the movie had been made and was just shelved indefinitely.
That was the rumor.
And
I thought that before we started this pre-production.
Yeah, and I thought it was kind of weird that, like, they never, like, The Rock was just kind of starting out as an action star when they supposedly made that. And they never released it.
He was a slightly more affordable star.
Yeah, when he got, like, really big. That's a little weird. So what I found out was actually it was never made. It never entered production. It never moved past the script phase. That initially the writers from Too Fast, Too Furious, Michael Brandt and Derek Haas, were hired.
The worst Fast movie.
Yeah, to write the script. That apparently wasn't enough. It got kicked around to a bunch of different writers. And it got to the point with the game where I think the creators at Midway were quoted as saying, like, look, our needs, our production and scheduling needs are different from theirs. So they keep, we've done our best to incorporate changes every time they rewrite the script into the game, but we can't do that anymore. So we need to move ahead with the game, and the game will just be what it is, and the movie will probably be something different. And originally they were going to release at the same time. They kept getting pushback. The game came out in 2006. The movie was eventually going to be in 2007, And then it just, that came and went, and eventually it was sold off to Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers was supposedly beginning production in 2015, and then decided that they were going to retool it, and that, for now, is the end of that.
I mean, it shows you, I guess Midway was holding a couple cards there, where, like, we own this property, we're making this game now to coincide with this with the movie's release. It's the best thing to promote it. If whether the movie's good or bad, we need to start the game right now. And they were, it looks like they were finished before the movie had shot one frame of film.
Yeah.
Back in the early internet days, and this, I just checked this thing, the site still exists, but there is a site, it technically is a multiplayer game. Have you guys ever heard of the Hollywood Stock Exchange?
Yeah, holy shit, it's been a while though.
So that was a website, and again, it's still around, where you go and they give you fake money and you buy stocks in upcoming movies, and then you trade stocks based on like how much money you think the movie will make at the box office. Wow. And it's all perceived, and it's just free, fun, whatever. I remember there was like a radio show in LA that a dude was like talking about it and trading futures, and this, I lost my shirt on this fucking movie because it never came out. On the fake stock exchange, I will never forgive Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Yeah, and it had John Woo attached, and this isn't the only time he's been attached to a failed video game movie project. So he was going to direct it. He eventually left, and Paul W.S. Anderson was going to take over.
Oh, the worst film director. Sweet.
He's not the worst.
He's the worst. He's the worst currently employed mega director.
But he had to go direct Death Race 2 instead. So he couldn't work on Spy Hunter, Nowhere to Run.
It's also fascinating to think about Spy Hunter was a game I didn't care about.
No.
Those PS2 Xbox games were great.
Yes.
Like they're really valiant reboots on Midway's part to take a top-down arcade 8-bitty shooter and turn it into a modern AAA fast like action car game. And I remember like, holy shit, this is the first Spy Hunter reboot's getting great reviews. And it almost immediately hit that like PlayStation greatest hits line, sold a million copies. They made another one. And what's funny is that they went ahead and released this without the movie. This gets the worst reviews of the game franchise so far. So the game based on the movie could have killed the franchise in games too.
Yep. And The Rock even commented on it during the 2017 Game Awards during a bit that was supposed to be promoting Jumanji.
You were in the game too.
Yes, right? I was in the game. Yeah, Spy Hunter, classic Midway game. Dun, 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 dun. 2006. I'm still loving my 3 out of 10 review from Game Informer, by the way. 3 out of 10.
Okay,
thanks, guys.
That's all right, fine.
Stop pissing.
Okay,
that.
Fine.
When he says 3 out of 10, he goes 3 with his fingers, and then 10, he takes down his index and ring fingers, and just, it's a middle finger that's visible very briefly.
Now, hey, The Rock put a lot of work into that game.
Yeah, and into
just
that
kidding.
Gesture, I'm sure.
And he's promoting Jumanji when he got Jumanji into Jumanji, not Jumanji out of Jumanji, like in the Robin Williams. It's an SNL reference to a recent sketch I really loved.
That, by the way, this was far from his worst digital appearance by then. Anyone who's seen The Scorpion King back
ooh,
this
one. Ooh, it's so awful. It's I think it's so every time I see a YouTube video of worst CG ever, that's the thumbnail. The Rock and
Yeah.
He did love doing the mocap for the game, though, as he says in this little featurette.
I love doing motion capturing work because as a gamer myself, it's great to make sure that, you know, the person who they're playing and who they're depicting is that real person. I love that.
Right? I do look cool. Right?
Super.
Okay.
He goes on to elaborate.
How many creative ways can you kill somebody? It sounds really sick. But without, say, for example, without a gun, but just hand-to-hand combat, how many ways can you break an egg? How many ways can you break an arm? How many ways can you stop somebody from breathing?
I don't remember the action in that game being that full of creative kills, but I'm sure they had him do a lot of different variations on them.
Jesus, you're not supposed to get in your fucking car.
Yeah. No, that's what you did in that game. Like
that's
one of the big complaints. It's like, yeah, there's all these on-foot shooting levels. That's not why I play Spy Hunter. Like, I
don't
just
want to sound like a Spy Hunter purist because you can throw the originals in a fire and I wouldn't notice. But I did love the PS2 one. I think I played on Xbox.
Yeah.
Very, very good.
No, it was critically acclaimed. And then they had a sequel that did okay. But
by the time I was in the games industry, like nobody managed to pull off a reboot like that ever again. It was really, really hard to get a 8-bit franchise into the modern era and then have it do this well. Oh, Spy Hunter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do also like that they changed the character's name to Alex Decker. Apparently it was originally Alex Sects, which is like, his name is Alex Sects? Really?
Mm.
Okay.
I mean, I'm spelling that out on my license plate right now. You can do it in 8 letters.
Mm. All right.
Yeah. Sure. Little known fact, his nickname is Upper.
Mm. Upper Sects?
Alex Upper Decker.
Oh!
It's like Upper Sex. What is that?
Upper Sex.
Is that like a town in England? Okay.
Probably.
Better joke than I was going to make.
It does. Like, Spy Hunter, like, you know, since we've talked so much about the script problems in the movie, I want to highlight, like, the one decent line that jumped out at me.
Can I help you? If your name is Dante, you can.
And if it's not?
Then I'll have to kill you.
Then I guess I'll be Dante.
All right.
Good one.
I guess. I didn't say it was amazing.
No. I mean, I think it's a fascinating cautionary tale.
Mm-hmm.
Why we don't see this happen that often. Like, we were just talking about, I think on 302010, all those, the Matrix games coming out to coincide with those two new Matrix franchises. And they did their best, but they didn't have the amount of time that a game needs. To coincide with the movie's release. This movie never happened, but it really hurt the whole franchise. We never really heard from it again.
No. Well, I think Midway going under also had something to do with why we've never
I would
had
imagine
Spy
yes.
Hunter game. I mean, sure this didn't help with that, but it's a sad story. But, actually much sadder than our next one, because that sort of has a happy ending. I don't know.
Number 4.
What? Did you think I was gone forever? Hell, I'd still hit it.
That trailer might have been the best thing about Duke Nukem Forever, but yeah, we were supposed to get a Duke Nukem movie, like going back to the 90s. It was first optioned by Lawrence Kasdanoff, who was the producer of the Mortal Kombat movie, and I guess the new Mortal Kombat movie. Also, I did not know he was also the director for the Mortal Kombat live stage show.
What?
That toured for a while.
Holy shit, this guy bought an early ticket. That's what I'm seeing here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no way anybody on Mortal Kombat Live should be involved with the movie. Holy shit. But that's the one thing I really can't forgive about Duke Nukem Forever.
Mm-hmm.
Is the amount of fun we had as nerds and games journalologists making fun of Duke Nukem never coming out. Ending that cycle ended something truly fun. And the silver lining you have is that the movie has been in development for way longer.
This is true.
Way longer.
Well, I'm just reading from Wikipedia here. It was announced in 2001 that there was going to be a live-action movie. Then 2008, Scott Fay said he was planning to produce the movie. Randy Pitchford hinted at the film in a 2017 interview. Supposedly, John Cena was attached to the project in 2018. And it's currently under production, pre-production. It's been announced from Legendary Entertainment, who did Kong movie, Dune.
From the Cobra Kai showrunners.
Yeah, from the Cobra Kai showrunners. That they're supposedly working on a movie adaptation.
Which is the only, I don't even want to call it a silver lining, but when I read about Cobra Kai, I'm like, that sounds fucking stupid.
Hmm.
And for the first 3 seasons, that show had me wrapped. It was fucking interesting.
The show was great.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of fell off watching some of the latter episodes. You know, that just happens in media nowadays. No reflection on the quality of the show. But if I didn't think that franchise could survive in 3 decades on, and if they think there's something to Duke Nukem, yay! I don't see it. Having just watched all the Evil Dead movies, like, the Ash route is the only one I can imagine that he's kind of, the joke is on Duke for most, because he's barely a character who can survive in modern gaming.
Yeah, well, he's based so much off of, like, 80s action stars. He's Schwarzenegger. He's, like, he steals lines directly from Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Hail to the king, baby. That's something Ash says.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, John Cena potentially being attached is like the one thing that makes this interesting, because it's like, if they take this in like a
Peacemaker.
Yeah, Peacemaker direction. Mm-hmm. Like you have this big, dumb, invincible buffoon who's gradually coming to grips with like, I'm kind of a dick, aren't I? I suck.
Yeah, him or Carl Urban. I just love that dude. I would love to see him. I want the cheesy voice. I want the shitty haircut. I want the red wife beater.
Yeah,
I want it all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you make Duke? You can't make Duke Nukem work with a straight face anymore.
That's right.
I mean, it was never that straight faced a character to begin with.
I mean, more than likely, the same thing they did with Ash versus Evil Dead. You have to prescribe him at least two young people to be around him at all times to let him know. This is not appropriate, but it's okay to laugh at.
I also think even since the days of Duke Nukem, it's a different time. You're not going to get away with any of that shit. Like, the Ash versus Evil Dead stuff never felt like the Evil Dead movies were super politically incorrect, whereas Duke Nukem, like, that was its identity. So we're kind of at a time where now it's like, Why do we need a Duke Nukem? Like, no one's.
That's what I'm saying. Like, the archetype can't survive in modern gaming. How could this survive on screen? But when we talk about Spy Hunter, those development times, the money put into that shit has fucking reversed. The movies are way easier to put out than the games. Maybe as a straight to Tubi streaming series. It's got to be something like Tubi.
So this is no knock on this news story, but this is just an example. Literally reading a news item today where Supergiant Games is adding body diversity to Hades 2, right? So this is the landscape of gaming we're in now. It's like, where the fuck does Duke Nukem fit into any of that?
Great knockers.
Were people complaining about that in the first Hades? I don't know.
Everyone's too hot.
I guess.
This is a bad idea, I feel like. And it's another one of those examples. Like, I think some high-profile guy has the rights... And the Karate Kid people were like in between things, and you want to sign on to this? Maybe some money exchanged hands, maybe some work's being done.
Mm-hmm.
Bad idea.
Here's where there's a little hope, is the Johnny character in the Cobra Kai TV series is the epitome of someone stuck in the past. So if you're trying to do the movie like based on, hey, Duke Nukem stuck in the past, everyone else is like, dude, that is inappropriate now. That's sort of funny because it actually does work quite a bit.
Yeah,
first seasons of Karate Kid.
To their credit, they that first season, like, they do everything they can to make Johnny irredeemable and somehow redeem him anyway.
Yeah. Well, they also, like, I feel like they eventually pushed it too far. Like, all right, now he just seems like somebody who was unfrozen was frozen in the 80s and came, like, what's a cell phone? What's that? Like,
I mean, we're you know, what's mildly YouTube? Progressive people and very online. There are a ton of people like that out there who identify with Johnny.
Mm.
I guess. And thought the show was about them and not Johnny learning.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. But yeah, Duke Nukem is like, I think about like Duke Nukem 3D, and that was sort of like games could push the envelope in a way that like even movies, comic books, TV, like no other medium could really do something like this.
I'll rip your head off and shit down your neck.
And he did.
He's gonna shit down your neck.
So he straight up stole Arlie Ermey's line, but then he acted it out.
Yeah, he did it. That cutscene is him using the monster's neck stump as a toilet with, like, just taking out a newspaper and whistling and everything. Like,
which I guess is really someone's hard. Never seen the uncut version of A Full Metal Jacket.
He doesn't shit down anybody's neck. I don't care how big the hole.
That's a deleted scene and it exists, all right?
No. You can't. You know how hard it'd be to shit down someone's neck?
He's dead now, so no one can sue me for making up that blatant lie, all right?
That's true. It's true. Shitting in someone's neck is like the dogs in a bathtub maneuver. Like, you know, when you put your balls in someone's...
By the way, the neck's not hollow like that. Like,
no.
You know...
I mean, if you line up exactly with, like, the trachea, maybe you could...
No, it'd be like shitting in someone's butthole. Back and forth pooping.
I
want
to
work this out.
I want a science YouTuber to try it. I want someone to tell us
all I know is in that cut scene, the special effect was very difficult to pull off, so Kubrick had to pull in the same special effects wizards that helped him fake the moon landing.
No, it can't happen.
No. No, you're right.
It can't happen. It, look, I know we have a diverse group of listeners, so if anybody out there is into space docking and can tell us whether this is possible or not, please let us know. Mm-hmm. And please Google space docking your filters off.
I never will. I think the anticipation for Duke Nukem was kind of killed by Forever, because...
Yeah, but these are recent developments with the movie.
Yeah, I know.
It's 2022. You know who should produce this film? The only people. WWE last year. Mm-hmm. They're the ones who should have made it. They should have put it in their quiver right next to Jingle All the Way 2 and Surf's Up sequels.
There's got to be another Marine out there, right? Got to make another Marine.
16th
maybe.
Marine, yeah. Starring Damian
Mysterio. Dude, when I was at Fox, that script was being passed around, and everyone's like, there's this new up-and-coming wrestler named John Cena. No one's ever heard of him, but he's going to be the next big star. And I'm like, you mean the prototype? And they're like, how do you know who this guy is? And I'm like, I follow OVW, and yeah, he's pretty, you know, muscular guy. And then, you know, who does it now? What's it? The Miz. The fucking Miz became the Marine because Cena can no longer do it.
I think, like, several wrestlers have taken it over. But why
the mantle,
not the
they passed on that?
Yeah.
it's like the Scorpion the King movies. Like, that series now stars someone who looks nothing like The Rock, or last did.
And that's a fun bit of wrestling. It's The Mummy 2, where they were allowed to call him Dwayne The Rock Johnson because WWE helped produce it.
Right.
That deal they made with The Rock to come back to wrestling this year, they gave him the rights to The Rock. So you can. I hope he starts billing himself as The Rock again in movies because he can legally do that now.
You know, the biggest travesty, speaking of WWE actors, is Triple H doesn't get enough credit for, was it Blade? One of the Blade movies
he was in. And I never saw it, that movie where he's just standing in front of a bunch of kids in front of a school bus, where he's doing like a Mr. Nanny role.
I think I've seen memes of that online. There was also, I think Edge was in a fucking Highlander movie at some point.
I mean, Edge, I believe, for the 10 years he wasn't wrestling, starred in exclusively in a lot of unwatchable Canadian garbage.
Well, he's the rated R superstar.
He is. They forgot
Michael's
to copyright
like,
that.
Shut up, guys. Michael just wants us to be quiet.
I forgot what you're talking about.
We should move on. I have nothing else to say about this.
No, I blacked out thinking about wrestling.
That the point I was trying to make about Forever was it sucked. It took forever to come out, and then the finished product was like, this is like a last-gen shooter. It's gray, it's dismal, it's not funny, it's not fun. The load times took for fucking ever on console.
You can ruin a franchise.
Yeah.
It turns out you can do a thing bad enough to ruin a franchise.
I don't think there's not many ways you couldn't ruin that franchise. Mm-hmm. Like, being true to it is the worst thing you could have done. And I thought the CODA, because I remember being there when Gearbox announced that they bought it and unveiled it, and it's coming out in 4 months, baby. And I think they were just working with what that previous studio had and enhancing what they could within a very short
time
frame. Sure. But I'm not sure how much better it could have been, but nothing could have been as good as wondering what it could have been.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing was, like, it had precedent. Like, Duke Nukem 3D is still very playable today. Like, that did a lot of stuff that was really ahead of its time.
There should be, every year for April Fool's, a Duke Nukem movie trailer with a real voice actor.
Yeah.
And every single year. And then never make it. Never make it. Mm-mm. Different genres with Duke in it.
Yeah.
Gimme.
Yeah, absolutely. Remake
I
Shakespeare.
I can't believe I went to four weddings and a funeral.
All right. Well, let's move on to
number three.
What have I got?
I know you guys are picking up on some of those sounds, at least.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Is this a movie, though?
This is a TV series that has not gotten off the ground multiple times, or at least twice. So I'll just let
another franchise I've worked on.
Oh,
hey.
All right. Well, maybe you
tell
have
us
some the
Vendy
insight
boy.
To share. I'll just play the chorus here to establish what it is.
Crash Bandicoot. Should have been a genius, but he doesn't quite compute. Crash Bandicoot. Anything can happen now that Crash is in pursuit.
Yeah.
So that was originally, I didn't realize, like, I think that footage surfaced a few years ago.
Yeah, it was the cutscenes for the PS1 game.
Yeah, yeah. That I think were meant to be used like as source material or to pitch networks on a Crash Bandicoot cartoon if it became a huge success. Apparently, the reason they were made for the original game, like that was originally just going to be the cutscenes, and then Sony is like, nuh-uh, we don't want any 2D stuff. We want to go all 3D. We want to show off polygons. Now. Yeah.
So. And having just watched the movie Brain Scan for 302010, distancing yourself from CD-ROM technology of 1994, good for you. Yeah. Good move.
Yeah.
Good
Definitely
move.
Definitely smart.
But it was that footage is beautiful because it looks like an unaired Fox Kids
yeah,
like 1993 pilot.
Could have gone after Animaniacs or something. That.
And Matt would know more about the franchise, but like, you know, I was kind of in on Crash 2, 1, 2, 3. He doesn't talk much. He doesn't have much of a personality.
Really? At all? Like,
yeah. I know he would develop one later on when the series went multi-platform, but like...
And certainly not compared to the PlayStation commercials where he's like talking shit to other mascots.
Plumber boy. What are you
Yeah. That was great. Can't believe I love
happened.
Those.
Yeah, I can't believe it happened.
I also didn't know that this was not the only dead-end attempt at pitching a Crash show, that in 2021, it was revealed that Amazon had been working on one. And a person who was revealed as someone working on the show, I forget if it was a writer or an animator, had posted about like that the show wasn't being made because Activision kept interfering and like, you know, giving notes on the scripts. And it's just like, yeah, we don't want... We don't like this joke. It's too grown up, or we want more grown up humor. Or what if you put Mario in here in this racing segment? And like,
ask Mario.
Yeah, go ask Nintendo. How are we going to get Mario in here?
The only reason I believe that, they've never announced a Call of Duty movie.
They have what? Actually.
Oh, they have?
Yeah. Apparently, a Call of Duty movie is another one that has been in development hell for a long ass time.
I can kind of see it, because any movie depicting the events that you do in Call of Duty would look like one of those Mark Wahlberg movies shot in Alabama that he makes.
Exactly. And, that's a problem. Dumb. Like, how do you differentiate that from any other Red State Jarhead Oorah movie?
Like, Red State Down. Every one of those movies, yes. Yeah. But that hasn't happened means Activision has some trouble in that licensing area. Either too many fingers or asking too much money. But Crash also, I was shocked to find out recently, like, you know, kids who weren't around when Crash was born know and love Crash. He has been kind of well taken care of, word of mouth, and that Crash 4 game kind of brought his star a little back up.
People like that game. The game sold really well. And the kart racers, they've had some good kart racers. They had that, like,
if you say so,
fairly recent kart racer that I think was just like sort of like a greatest hits re-release of.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
But it's like, if I'm making movies, those kind of releases aren't enough to get me interested in making dumping tens of millions of dollars into a movie based on something you can't even make money off of consistently in the gaming landscape. So that's I would guess why there's cold feet, or why it's not as hot as it could be. I don't know. Like, I don't yearn for a Crash adaptation. And I'm like, Sony should just make it. I keep forgetting it's not a Sony property. But that I had it written down as like a everybody knows that story. Like, Uncharted took so long to make. Mark Wahlberg had to switch to Sully from Nathan Drake.
From Nathan Drake. That was weird.
And well, Sony owns a movie studio.
Speaking of Uncharted, it's so weird to think that that's the same developer behind The Last of Us TV show, behind Crash Bandicoot. Like, Naughty Dog, that is how far they've come as a dev. That's wild. Yeah.
And,
yeah, man.
And nobody asked for a Jack and Daxter series. That never happened.
That seems kind of ideal.
There was a decent Ratchet and Clank movie, but yeah, no Jack and Daxter.
Yeah.
Just like, no.
And a canceled Sly Cooper movie that we only ever got.
Actually, remember there was the game that coincided with the movie, and I think part of me is like, why didn't Sony just buckle up and fucking do it? And like, they did. And I think they lost like $100 million on two things that were actually pretty good. Just didn't work out.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now you can see the Ratchet and Clank, the game and the movie, why they don't do that. I mean, you can see why people were more gung-ho to make something with Mario and Sonic, because they have consistently released games that update themselves and can be presented alongside the... can make the movie more popular 5 years from now, whereas Ratchet and Clank kind of couldn't do that.
Yeah. I do have a sound from the leaked test footage that was linked to the Amazon series. This is a little bit difficult to find, and it's not going to be the same as watching the video, but what the fuck, I'll play it anyway.
Dr. Neo Periwinkle Cortex here. With this ingenious device, this ordinary bandicoot will be mutated into the perfect leader for my Cortex Commander. It's alive! Obey your creator! What have I done?
Yeah, Crash goes crazy, eats a laser gun, fires some blasts out of his mouth, and escapes.
So whenever I feel like that's... I couldn't see any of that. I could only hear it, just like you folks at home. I feel like when I tell my parents, what are you going to do tonight? I'm going to have a couple drinks, drop a gummy, and watch some cartoons. That's what they hear.
Yeah.
Madness. Just madness.
Mm-hmm.
I felt insane to all that.
It's like, you know, when Stimpy's watching a cartoon, you just hear, like, you know, sound effects like boink, and then manhole cover crashes, and yeah, et cetera.
Yes.
Et cetera.
And he makes little Three Stooges noise while he does it.
Mm-hmm.
Crash Bandicoot.
Crash
I'm not
Bandicoot.
Exactly rooting
never
for
happened.
It. Never happened. Probably never will.
Got closer than some of the other ones on this list. Maybe not as
owned
close
by
as
Microsoft
Spy
now.
Hunter,
so it's got that Microsoft money behind it.
Well, maybe
is
never
it
can
owned by
tell.
Microsoft? Wait, what?
They bought Activision.
Oh, shit.
No, that's
did I forget
right,
that?
Yeah.
did I forget that?
I didn't
that?
Make that
yes,
connection
they...
in my head. And to its credit, like there was like one brief TV miniseries made in 2007 that would just like four not even TV miniseries, just a web miniseries to promote Crash of the Titans. So that technically happened, but
that's crazy.
It's not quite
so
the
like
same.
Now that remember like, there was that Crash Bandicoot commercial when he's in the costume and he's like, I brought some friends with me. So it was like Sweet Tooth and Laura Croft, and like now two of those people are Microsoft exclusives. Oh wait, no, sorry, they only published the Tomb Raider game. Never mind. Yeah.
I think these like were CG animated shorts. All 3 minutes. And that's another thing, that the canceled Amazon series was supposedly just going to be like a series of 7-minute shorts, like, you know, presumably collected into episodes, like a Cartoon Network show or something.
The faulty bargain there, I think, is that the numbers on, they don't release numbers on streaming views because they're abysmal. They're terrible compared to traditional broadcast networks, which we're told all the time are because they are struggling, are terrible. Also, I think we should say this in all honesty, if you're within 10 years of our age, above and below, if you're trying to capitalize on my nostalgia by making a kid show for me in my 40s for something that I liked in my teens, I'm going to watch the first episode, and I'm never going to watch anything else.
Yes,
and
correct.
If I have kids, I might force them to watch it, and maybe they'll like it.
Be
but
like me. Consume the same stimuli that I did.
I would say it. Orson Lamont. I love this as a kid. You might, too. That's how I would say it, Michael. Mm-hmm. You're a terrible father.
So how's that first episode of X-Men 97 treating you, Chris?
Well, as someone who went back to watch the X-Men series, like, this is terrible. Like, I'm terrified of watching it. I also canceled Disney Plus, so I haven't gotten into it yet.
I have heard it's great.
I've heard it's great.
But, well, if you don't like a nostalgia play aimed at something you liked when you were a teen, how about a more adult one?
Number two.
Is a man not entitled to the sweat of his brow?
No.
No, says the man in Washington, it belongs to the poor. No, says the man in the Vatican, it belongs to God. No, says the man in Moscow, it belongs to everyone. I rejected those answers.
What's the game? What's the series?
Bio-shizzy, if I'm English?
Yeah, Bio-shizzy.
Bioshock.
Bioshock is, I believe, how it's
Bioshock.
Pronounced, please.
Bioshock.
Vladimir Putin, that's how you pronounce it. Bioshock.
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 Yeah,
they make fun of me underwater.
died.
Well, it has the same gear story. It was somehow greenlit for another big treatment from Netflix, who are more likely...
That's
to
true.
Greenlight
yeah.
anything, they release more things than any other like multiple studios combined. It's not impossible, but they also cancel shit, and they've been real cutthroat lately. So because I think we talked earlier, the streaming model is based on getting subscription dollars, rather than ad revenue. They're having to pivot to more ad revenue because the streaming dollars just don't make a lot of sense anymore, especially if you're making a $100 million movie. That's what I'm going to say here is probably predictable. How could you enjoy BioShock more as a movie? It was exciting for what it is as a narrative piece because you're getting to walk through all of this. What are they going to do? Add more pixels? What? How could that story be more interesting in a movie? Like, why would you even want to see that?
I mean, maybe if they do what Fallout did and, like, rather than try to adapt the events of any of the games, just build out the world a bit. And give us a narrative set in Rapture or in Columbia, or and then eventually connect the two worlds. Something like that.
Like Fallout. It would be like Fallout.
Yeah.
It's totally possible, but that's not what BioShock is known for in any way.
At first it had some huge heat behind it in 2008. Right. It was announced like Universal was going to make this. It was going to be with Gore Verbinski. It was going to be like $200 million. And as for what happened, I found a clip of Ken Levine himself explaining it during a 2013 BAFTA event. I'll warn you, this is a little bit long, but I think it's illuminating.
You know, there was a deal in place and actually was in production at Universal with Gore Verbinski was directing it. And what happened was, this is my theory.
I edited this down Gore a little bit.
It was a very big movie, Gore was very excited about it, and he wanted to make a very dark, what he would call a hard R film. Then Watchmen came out, and which I actually think is a really, I really like Watchmen, and I've actually talked to Zach, and I think he's a great visual filmmaker, and it didn't do well for whatever reason. I think the studio got cold feet about making a R-rated $200 million film, and they said, well, Gore, what if it was an $80 million film? And enough time had gone by, Gore didn't want to make an $80 million film, and so they brought another director in, and I didn't really see the match there. And so, you know, Take-Two is one of these companies that gives a lot of trust to their creative people, and so they said to me, if you want to kill it, Ken, kill it, and I killed it.
Oh, shit.
Yep. Ken Levine killed it.
And then I quit.
Yeah, well, you know, he talks about, like, I didn't feel like I needed to compromise. And, like, you know, the world was a certain way, and I didn't want to, you know, compromise and let someone else come and fuck it up. So
that's fascinating, because that suggests, I feel like there is, Matt, I don't know, how would you say that, like, previously, like, you make a movie out of a big property, the studio is licensing it and can just do whatever they want. Nowadays, it seems like, you know, the Nintendo people are in the meeting. The Sonic people are in the meeting. Bethesda was there to talk about the Fallout show. The Naughty Dog is literally directing the show. Mm. So, like, this might have been the first example of that. Like, if this is going to be a movie, it has to be a representative piece of the franchise, not just Hollywood's take on the first BioShock. Because I'm guessing it was greenlit when, like, BioShock was one of the biggest, I don't want to say successes, but media darlings across the media landscape. And there was no new BioShock. If Universal can make one faster, there's a lot of money to be made there. But yeah, I've never heard of. I can't imagine Ken Levine having that kind of power. Yeah.
That surprises me, because that's like, you know, if you know anything about how a lot of movies are developed, like even writers, you know, straight up screenplay writers of movies, they don't have a lot of.
They're mercenaries. Power
typically, yeah, it's just like, yeah, they're there. Sometimes they're on set to advise, but like they don't have the ability to kill stuff, to overrule stuff. It's like no. Typically, the people paying for the thing have that power. It's the producers,
you know.
Like they have final say. So yeah, that is surprising to hear. My guess is, not to discredit his story, but like, sure, he's telling himself he killed it. There were probably a variety of other factors where other people were like, let's let this be killed.
It was more the guy who makes way more money than Ken Levine. I fucking hate this. Mm-hmm. You say the word, and I'll do what I was probably going to do without your vote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kill this.
I'll do it eventually anyway. But
do we know where this was in development compared to Infinite? Because, you know, say what you will about BioShock Infinite.
It was about eight. Well, I'm not sure. Let's see what year it was. I did see that something saying that it was about 8 years away, 8 weeks away from filming before they pulled the plug.
That's my favorite part about this. Gore Verbinski. I can't compromise my vision. I'm going to go do what I was born to make. You know what he made the year he left that movie?
Ringo.
The Lone Ranger.
Oh, God.
The Lone Ranger
Johnny
is what he
Depp's
means.
The Lone Ranger?
Johnny Depp's Tonto's The Lone Ranger.
Army Hammer's The Lone Ranger?
Yes. Everything about it is wrong. It's the stupidest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Hmm. Both of those guys have been canceled in one form or another.
Yeah, sort of.
Depp's sort of back. He's making his way back.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. I'm seeing him in more stuff.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Depp was already like, hey, all of your movies cost too much and they bomb. We're not going to give you the same amount of money to make them.
They didn't bomb, did they?
Dude, Depp was in that wasn't a Pirates movie does terribly.
Even Alice in Wonderland?
Not that one, but I only like the one where he's Whitey Bulger. But if we just watched Transcendence, ugh, what a terrible film. Secret Window? No, that was right after Pirates.
Okay, yeah. Whatever. But yeah,
From Hell. Anyone? Anyone watch From Hell?
From Hell. I watched that and I liked it, and then I read the fucking telephone book size graphic novel by Alan Moore, and just like this cut out so much, and most of what it cut out was like deeply troubling and borderline pornographic.
But it's like when I saw it, just like what you're supposed to do is see the movie Bioshock, and like, wouldn't it be insane if I could walk around Rapture?
Mm-hmm.
If I could come face to face with a big daddy, and it just
you're working
backwards. Like, nobody likes Bioshock because of the cutscenes. It's because how it unfolds in front of your eyes.
Bioshock almost does work better as a walkthrough, like a ride, like a maze in a Six Flags at Halloween time. Like, yeah, we have the new Bioshock maze. That sounds dope. I would totally go to that. You know?
Like, if I don't want to get all scholarly about it, but like, Bioshock is the most expensive indie game ever made. It is not as action-oriented as you remember. It is mostly walking around and listening to stuff and encountering things and being and dread and fucking dread.
Mm-hmm.
Do you trust this $100 million movie to handle dread or subtlety? I don't.
Yeah, I mean, it depends. Like, so Gore Verbinski and $200 million, that paints an interesting picture. $80 million and Juan Carlos Fresnadillo, who did 28 Weeks Later. I didn't like 28 Weeks as much as
I thought it was a better movie.
I'm trying to remember what was.
So when where Robert Carlyle basically becomes like the revenge zombie.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
Was that Alex Garland or had he moved on?
I think I think he might have. Yeah.
He moved on to Civil War, the movie that says nothing while saying something the entire film. Jesus. It was fine. But no.
Yeah, Bioshock never happened. Well, it might happen.
Well, Netflix again.
Again, as of 2 years ago, we'll see where that goes.
The only recent news I have is like Netflix keeps making these high profile gambles, trying to get the millennial money, and they do it with Cowboy Bebop, and they cancel it one season. It's like, guess what? This wasn't sustainable. This isn't a sustainable model to make things.
Yeah.
The only way Bioshock works, and I'm not sure I would want to watch something like this, is, you know, a big piece of those games is like all the tapes you're finding that are they're really meant to be sort of flashbacks. It's like, here's what this universe was right before shit was about to collapse. So that movie would, if it was like heavily just, there would be a bunch of flashback episodes, like here's right before everything goes to shit and people start attacking each other and stuff. It's like, okay, that might actually work. You could sort of tell a story, but yeah, if it's based around a main character who really is just a cipher in the game anyway. Like, and let's not talk about the straight Bioshock Infinite because fuck that. Like, no, you can't make a show out of that. But like, yeah, the original Bioshock, okay, that sort of works. But we know the twist at this point. So, you know.
It would resemble, I think, if it was a show, it would resemble one of the new releases I played this week. I think Michael did too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what were people, I think you'd have to go, like, what were people's lives like in Rapture? You'd really have to dig into that and make a shitload of characters. And all the surviving characters in Bioshock want to kill you. They're all your enemies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That could be interesting. And then, season two is like, oh, after everything's gone to shit, Jack shows up and he's like this character in the background who all the other characters keep talking about, like he's Poochie.
I think, I think it's a lazy idea. I would love to see someone make something good out of it. Prove me wrong.
Yeah.
It would also be supremely expensive. You wouldn't actually film underwater.
Well, I mean,
but
it's all green screen, but still.
Unless it's James Cameron. He did that shit.
Yeah.
That hotel in Dubai, one of those underwater hotels in Dubai, just film it there.
You sound like two people have not seen Avatar 2 yet, and I hate you for it.
No.
Never anyway, will. let's land can't, this can't thing. Make me. Oh man, the moodiness, the quiet contemplation. Can you dig Metroid as a movie?
Okay.
How is this number one? This is like the most non-existent movie ever.
I know, but it's been non-existent many times over for 21 years.
I didn't recognize it at first. I was like, is he playing Rhaegar? Was there going to be a Rhaegar movie?
It's Blaster Master.
Yeah, no, that's Metroid. Happy Metroid. This is sort of like the this has been optioned by a big deal Hollywood director, it's gonna fucking rule. In 2003, it was announced that the rights to Metroid had been optioned by Warren Zeidy and Craig Perry of Zeidy Perry Entertainment. I'm reading that off of Wikipedia, obviously, but it doesn't matter because in 2004, the following year, John Woo came in and said that he would take over the project. John Woo, director of Mission Impossible 2 and Hard Boiled.
That movie's great. Yeah. Mission Impossible 2.
I love that. What's
the opposite of holding up, but like still incredibly entertaining and well made?
Best cliff climbing sequences in any movie to date. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. Yeah. You know?
Two people drive full speed at each other with motorcycles, jump off, collide in midair, and keep fighting before they hit the ground.
Yes, they play motorcycle anime chicken, and it fucking rules.
It's awesome. Like,
yeah, I can't hate on that movie. So here's the thing. Sort of a similar issue as the last entry. Like, how do you make a Metroid game? If it's based on Prime, like, that's sort of what Bioshock is, too. You're exploring a lot of mostly empty environments, scanning shit, kind of trying to uncover what happened before you got there. Like, it's not really...
Metroid has always been a very solitary thing. So, apparently, the Metroid movie was teased repeatedly. Someone asked Reggie Fils-Aimé about it, and he's like, oh, it'll be at E3 2005, it was not.
My popcorn is ready.
Mm-hmm. Then it was finally revealed, like, it was killed partly because Nintendo, I mentioned the failure of the 1993 Super Mario Brothers movie. That reverberated, and Nintendo got cold feet and decided they didn't want anyone adapting this. The co-creator of Metroid...
Metroid for anyone!
...has said he does not want anyone making a movie... Unless it's like this guy who directed the cutscenes for Metroid Other M. But
I mean, I was going to say that's the only John Woo shit that there is in Metroid, the cutscenes from Other M.
Yeah.
Long talking sequence in karate.
But I think, again, the success of the Mario movie has kind of softened his and other people at Nintendo's perspective. And it's just like, oh, maybe we would like to see someone do an adaptation of this. There have been a bunch of people interested. As I know, nobody like firmly optioning the rights.
I mean, if the rumors are to be believed, and like the reason we don't get many Metroids is, you know, it's not a huge thing in Japan, so Nintendo quote unquote cares about it less. Like, okay, yeah, you could see this one happening sooner than like some of the more like crown jewels in terms of their franchises, right?
I still think it is the... I'm going to try and choose my words carefully here so no one comes after me.
Mm-hmm.
Of the Nintendo crown jewels, the Thanos Gauntlet, if Metroid is in there, it's the lowest selling one of those.
It's more like the Nintendo family jewels.
Well, I mean,
it's down there is what Matt's saying.
It's telling that I think the last Metroid game produced by a Japanese team was Fusion for the Game Boy Advance. Like, Prime and Samus Returns and Metroid Dread have all been Western teams.
Freedom Force.
Yeah, I guess. Well, who made that? Was that
I think
was that
it was
retro?
I don't remember. But I think either way, it's foolish. Because, like, unless John Woo loves Metroid, and I would love him even more, you're capitalizing off of a brand and not realizing what the brand is.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you want to make Alien... Or Aliens, what are you doing with the Metroid franchise? There's not much you can get out of this that's not a lot of bile and shooting and solitariness and dread. Who would this be for? Would Nintendo want to make anything but a PG movie for with one of its properties? I don't think so, but it can get away with that kind of... tonally, Metroid is incapable of being PG.
I think
you got to have a lot of violence on screen.
I mean, it could be PG-13. If it's aliens, it doesn't count as R-rated.
They did a Doom, so why not?
That's true. I think, again, pulling from Wikipedia here, there's an interesting, the Metroid wiki. There's a quote from Jordan Vogt Roberts, who did Kong Skull Island, saying, "I have a pitch for a Metroid movie. They'll never let me. It's too crazy. It legitimately would be her, Samus, alone. It would be a little bit of her talking to herself. As soon as they introduce other talking characters in those games, to me, it loses everything.
Yeah.
You put her alone, and it's almost got more to do with the silence of a movie like Drive, like the quietness and having...
I was going to bring it up. Like, does she ever actually talk? Like, how often have we heard Samus say anything?
I'm not sure if she's ever spoken in the
Other
games.
M.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Other M, of course. Thank you.
In the other games, it's just maybe a grunt here or there.
Yeah,
you know,
like she types things in Super Metroid and in Fusion, the other games, but like we never hear her voice.
Yeah, no, and I get it. I get that's why he's saying that, and it's like,
but yeah, he wants it to be a quote real intense mood piece, but mixed with sci-fi. So
right, it's got to be fucking Castaway.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I do like though is the fact that like, so we brought up John Woo a few times that. At one point in video game adaptations, there were like three or four directors that played video games in their lifetime that they would just attach to projects. Like, well, this guy likes those weird video games. Put him on it. And it's like, now at least we're at a point where like almost at most creatives probably were gamers or have been gamers where it's just like you don't have that issue of like, oh, you got a pigeonhole. There's like three or four guys that can do this because no one else knows what the fuck you're talking about. It's like, nah, there's enough creators now that have cool takes on this, which is why, one of the reasons why I think we get good adaptations now. It's like, they grew up playing this. They understand what's cool about it. But more importantly, they understand how to adapt what's cool about it to the screen. Because it doesn't...
I think it's a natural
transition all the time.
That thing I was talking about earlier, where like even having those game company executives in the room, like Samus wouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're avoiding like 10 years... You're avoiding 20 years of Nostalgia Critic video, like YouTube fodder, just by having that guy in the room. You won't embarrass yourself in front of your fan base. Yeah. But I understand you need to make it commercial somehow, but... How the fuck do you do that with Metroid? How do you make a commercial movie out of Metroid that the fans would enjoy? It's a stupid proposition.
We're not visionary filmmakers, so we're not going to figure it out.
I've seen a ton of movies that would be like, that guy should make a Metroid movie. What's his name? Moon. Make a Metroid movie. All good. Maybe that recent Adam Sandler movie, Spitchemin. I haven't finished watching it yet. But the solitariness of space has been tackled in a billion movies. That is not a $100 million genre.
Nope.
It won't work.
That's like an A24 fucking movie, right? Where it's like triple I.
Which
type
that
deal.
Would be automatically interesting if this came out under A24 or Annapurna.
But also like, why does it have to be a $100 million movie? Like, the dirty little secret is you can shoot movies on iPhones now. Like, people can make CG on their phones. Like, AI, all this nonsense. Nintendo should, of all franchises, let people mess around with Metroid a little bit.
Well, that's, I think, the beauty when you get success from something like Mario is, so Ubisoft has had this strategy for a while. Like, they have stuff that are like the major motion pictures, and then they have that like the TV series about the game developers. Like, so you
and,
you
and the
can
wolf,
sort of
the wolf within. What is it called?
Oh, the wolf. Yeah, the oh God! What is that called? Like, the werewolf within us or among us? What is that?
No,
Werewolves Within.
Werewolves within. There it is.
You can
diversify your portfolio. Is what I'm saying. Like, you don't, you know, you can say, hey, this is more the indie thing. This is this genre film or whatever. Mm. So like, you can start to take more of those bets once you have that one big success. You know. So.
Yeah, and if you chalk it up to marketing money, you can do whatever. What was that Ubisoft Netflix series? The Blood Dragon?
Yeah, Captain Laserhawk. Blood Dragon remix.
To not take yourself so seriously. This won't be the end of our brand because it doesn't connect very much. It's just if you're a fan of this stuff, you'll get a kick out of this shit.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, enjoy it. It's a neat approach.
But you have to be careful with that because then you get like Fat Mega Man in Street Fighter Cross Tekken.
Well, I'm just going to say it. This might be a hot take. Jake Gyllenhaal's Assassin's Creed better than Jake Gyllenhaal's Roadhouse. Just no, going on record with that shit.
Is Prince of Persia, but I see your joke.
Mm. My bad. My bad. God damn it. it was the perfect guy. God, what's Fassbender. His name? Yeah, Fassbender, the X-Men guy. Yeah. His Assassin's Creed. Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm. Also better than his Roadhouse.
Better than Roadhouse.
It doesn't exist.
That new Roadhouse is, woo, yeah. Boy.
But also,
was it not good?
It's fine.
Roadhouse is the best bad movie ever made in my lifetime. It is.
Oh, it's not as
amazing.
Good as the best. It's not as good as the original. Not even close.
Yeah. Pain don't hurt.
But I found out something that there is an actress who's voiced an interest in playing Samus Aran, and I kind of feel like she'd be perfect. Brie Larson.
Oh hell yeah!
Apparently talked about shit. Like she went dressed as Samus to a Halloween costume. Talked on Gary Whitta's podcast about how much she wants to play it. And I believe this is from a sponsored Instagram post she did where she's playing Metroid Dread.
Samus is a character that has inspired me since I was a little girl. This large, robotic, powerful character had this blonde ponytail woman at the end of it. I've loved over the years playing Samus in Super Smash Brothers in every iteration. It's always been my go-to character.
That's kind of cool.
It is cool. Mm-hmm. I'm just, it just sometimes, I don't know, we have so much, we only have so much attention to see something we love spun off. Maybe that's just me being old, but when I see people getting excited over, they're making Avatar The Last Airbender in live action, what do you want from that? Why do you want to see that? Want something at least. If you want to see Samus's armor in real life, go to fucking Comic-Con. It's everywhere.
Well, I feel like it used to be that this was sort of, if you saw a film, a movie made of something, that was legitimizing it in the eyes of pop culture. This is something big and important, and we get to see it realized on the big screen. And now it's just I would have said why do I need to see a Fallout series? And I was like that right up until I started watching it. And
trailer's good.
Amazing. Yeah, the trailer was okay, but then people started reacting to it positively. There was a lot of word of mouth on Twitter.
But I can tell you what I would have wanted to see from a Fallout game, even as someone who doesn't revere the franchises, because most of the time I have to spend 80 minutes walking to the scenes that the show seamlessly transitions from.
That's true. mm-hmm. More fast travel. That's what Chris wants in Fallout.
Yeah, in a Fallout game, yes. Introduce the dogs earlier.
More fast travel for Chris.
There's something like Avatar The Last Airbender. How can this benefit from being live action other than giving you an excuse to watch it again? Mm. And then for me, that was sort of part of it because, I had – it's easier to watch a movie than it is to play a 60-hour game over and over again. Yeah. That's also part of it. It is nice having a good movie based on something you love.
I'm just going to hold out hope that they make a live-action Looney Tunes someday.
They did.
No, I'm – nah, never mind.
You motherfucker.
what if it was just a guy playing Bugs Bunny?
Hey, I'm Bugs Bunny.
Exactly.
Vin Diesel, I'm bugging.
Actually, they made a live-action Looney Tunes. It was called Shoot 'Em Up with Clive Owen. It was fucking amazing.
That is fucking hysterical. That is, they do shoot a carrot in that movie, don't they? Mm-hmm. Jesus. But I encourage fans to say, want to see something. And you don't have to be a YouTuber to, get the sugar rush of, I wonder if Darth Maul's going to be Luke's dad. Fuck all that shit. What can the medium of film offer this that the medium of gamedom can't? And Metroid, it's probably going to need a lot of dialogue. It's probably going to need a lot of action sequences. And it's probably going to need a fucking idiotic conspiracy theory to end the movie on. And,
At that point, it's no longer Metroid because that's not Metroid. Other than the action thing, isn't known for any of that stuff. So
it's at its heart a weird survival game, and it's totally based on Alien.
Yeah, 100%.
So what the fuck do you do? Make it based on Aliens because you're not going to want to pick anything else from the Alien franchise. I can promise you that.
Sure. Anyway,
a shark on beer is a beer engineer. God, I love that line.
Metroid movie will probably never be made, but who knows if the Zelda movie does okay? It could happen.
Zelda movie is vaporware, as far as I'm concerned. And we'll I was like, that movie got announced a billion years ago. It was officially announced in November of last year.
Well,
what is wrong?
other stuff announced that was a billion years ago that died. I think there was a TV series announced that kind of went away.
Maybe I feel like there was some.
There was something about 5 years ago that
right.
Caught up
there,
in dead
it
hell
might have been a rumor that Netflix and Zelda were talking or something like that.
Yeah. And then after the Mario movie, it was like, oh no, this is.
They have to take a meeting over Zelda now, but this is officially a deal signed with the guy who ruined Spider-Man. So gross. Not looking forward to it. It's at Sony.
Yuck. Chris Baker? Sorry. Yeah, who ruined Spider-Man. I love you, Chris. Oh, yeah. I'm just teasing.
I thought it was Andrew Garfield.
No, he's great.
No, he's
fine. Great Spider-Man.
Yeah, we like him again. Jesus, okay. Mike.
Cool. He's a terrible fine. Spider-Man. He's only in one good Spider-Man movie.
Yeah.
And it's
and it's not either of the ones where he was the main Spider-Man.
But he's a good Spider. He might be the best Spider-Man.
Maybe. All right. Well,
Miles Morales.
That's our top five game movies stuck in development hell. Hope this was entertaining and informative to you. But we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some new releases, some news, some other stuff. So stay tuned.
Crawl out through the fallout, baby, when they drop that bomb. Crawl out through the fallout with the greatest of aplomb. When your white count's getting higher, hurry, don't delay. I'll hold you close and kiss those radiation burns away.
Let's get scratching.
Would you like exclusive bonus podcast commentaries and more from the Laser Time crew? Then we strongly encourage you to support this show on patreon.com/lasertime. It supports not only this show, but all the rest of the Laser Time Network. You'll get commentaries, play games with the hosts, see exclusive videos first, and receive an uncut weekly ad-free podcast bonus time. Speaking of which, here's a quick taste.
We are going to be talking about the film from 1984 that I've watched the most number of times.
Oh,
no other film in 1984 have I watched and rewatched as many times as this film.
Not even Paris, Texas?
Not even Barton Fink?
Nope.
I think I'm sort of with you on this, because it's just one of my earliest memories. And I think, given our ages, 1984, I'm not asking to watch any movies. I don't know any movies exist, really. I have to be brought to one, or it has to be shown to me. And I think I have really specific memories of this was just brought to school.
Yeah.
I would have been 4 when the movie came out, so I think there's no way I'm in the theater, because it's Neverending Story is not a huge hit.
Yeah, listeners, we are talking about the 1984 film, The Neverending Story.
Get Bonus Time, a weekly, uncensored, and commercial-free podcast every Tuesday, starting for just $5 on patreon.com/lasertime.
And welcome back to our second segment, where we're just going to dive headlong into that morass of stickiness known as... Harold Halibut is on Game Pass and various other things, a game that looks like, when I first saw it, I assumed it was like, why is this like... Wes Anderson-esque stop motion movie being played during the Game Awards. It looks like stop motion with puppet models, but it's all in 3D, and it's about people living in an underwater Rapture. Exocolony. Yeah, basically Rapture.
It was actually like a story I wrote as a young kid, but it's different, but the one I wrote was a ship escaping Earth during an apocalypse that ends up crashing underwater and has to live there forever. It's pretty much what happens to them, but they're not on Earth.
Yeah.
They were not they were supposed to find a new world, instead are forced to live underwater for what, like 60? They've been there for 60 years.
Is that in Harold Halibut or in your story?
In Halibut. I didn't do the math exactly, but it was like year 15,000 after crash.
Oh, damn.
So I don't... Help me with the math here.
Is that day 15,000, do you mean?
Or no, year? It was year. Year. Okay. It was AC, because they used
so
BC...
So 15,000 years they've been underwater.
Yeah.
Hmm.
All right. No, that probably is days, actually. yeah. days, but like 45 to 60 years, because I'm bad at math.
Yeah, it just it begins with you. Like I didn't get a lot of time to play it, but it begins with you just being badgered by bureaucracy. Like, oh, you didn't buy the new green credits to go to this place on top of your blue ones, and now you've got to pay a fine. And
well, that's in my story. It's why I became fascinated by it. Why I like sci-fi like this. You have to do your job, mm-hmm. or everybody dies.
Yeah.
So if there's an energy insufficiency, or there's something tainting the water, we don't want to be. Nobody wants to be here. And there's bureaucracy here for a reason, and if you don't do your job, people die, because mm-hmm. everyone is responsible for everyone's yeah. life.
So Harold Halibut is
Harold Halibut. Like, oh, there's not many people left. And you're working in a research lab that is helping grow, feed fish, looking for organic life, and also trying to find solar flare definition on certain rock sediment. That's more exciting. It's more interesting than I'm making rock sediment sound.
Hmm.
But yeah, you played it, and like, yeah, like it looks like a claymation game.
It's a point and click style game. I recommend, like, for whatever reason, it defaults to performance, which it absolutely does not need to do. You should set this to quality, because then the models look a bit better. They look a bit more photorealistic.
The textures look amazing.
Yeah.
In performance mode, but you move like shit. It seems. This is almost a poorly optimized thing. Your game is not doing as much as Final Fantasy Rebirth. Fix this.
Well, considering that claymation doesn't operate at 60 frames per second.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's like, if it animates a bit jankily, that's appropriate.
It does in performance mode, and there's a lot of jank in there that is not just that. But I don't have any other criticism. I played like an hour or two of it. I thought it was captivating.
Yeah. It's about you're just kind of a low-level maintenance worker who befriends a fish alien.
And the moment I'll spoil for you that happens early in the game, like, what's going on here? I work in a research lab, and I thought it was going to be a BioShock moment. A fish swims past your tank lab with a sign saying, "We live free out here." And what the fuck is going on? We're stuck under the ocean. We have to deal with a fish uprising. Jesus, this sucks.
Or just trolling you. Just like, fuck yeah man, we live free out here.
And the fish can write and read? Oh.
Yeah, fuck you, you're the ones living in an aquarium now. We come up and observe you.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So you mentioned you played it for an hour, Chris. How much playing is here versus walking around?
This is the funniest thing about it. I looked at the achievements, and several of the achievements are wasting time. Not only is there an achievement for watch TV for 10 minutes. There's an achievement, and it's 70G on Xbox. Complete the game at a leisurely pace. Finish the game in over 15 hours. You will get a huge achievement for it.
Love it.
Yeah, so meander and walk around, because it's kind of meant to do that with, and the characters and dialogue and the scenario has been interesting enough to sustain that. I don't regret downloading it for nothing, but that's Game Pass for you. Oh, here's a really dumb thing I meant to mention at the top of the show.
Please.
Brendan. Crawl on YouTube, whatever his Twitter is, was absolutely right about Blasphemous. Blasphemous 2, he mentioned, is way better. Blasphemous 1 is on PlayStation. What is their Game Pass? Plus Essential or Plus Extra. Point is, I didn't have to pay for it. That game is fucking awesome. Really, really good. Would have been my game of the year 2 years ago.
Oh, damn.
Always knew you were a blasphemer. Now just in a different
way. Oh, it
way.
Is filled with horrific, just Spanish Catholic, horrible, horrible Christ and classical imagery.
Mm-hmm.
Blood and guts. It's wonderful. There are literally fatalities in the game. It's a Dark Souls Metroidvania. He was right to bring it up, and I wish I would have voted for it. Now, having not played the second, which he said is even better than the first is excellent. The only thing I noticed I wanted to ask you guys about, I've been playing a ton of Helldivers, and I was been bitching the people I'm playing Helldivers with. My PS5 controller, I looked it up. It's supposed to, on a charge, it's supposed to get to 6 to 12 hours of gameplay.
That is relative to how much shit is going on.
I get 4, and I've been playing that for like pretty consistently for 2 months. And then I put in Blasphemous and like, I can play this shit all day and my controller doesn't die. And I just went and looked it up and it's just like, it is a huge factor of like a PS5 game that uses everything in the controller, that it uses the haptic feedback, that it uses the pressure sensitive, but the lights, the microphone, all that shit takes off drastic amounts of the controller battery. And I know there's settings for some of those, like turn it off. I don't want to kill my vibration. I don't want to kill. I don't want to kill the vibe. I have a mic plugged into Helldivers sometimes, but it really is like 3.5 to 5 hours. Helldivers, I'm just saying, is really draining my PS5 controller. It took Blasphemous to remind me, like, this gets much better battery life normally.
I think, Blasphemous battery life way different than, like, Horizon battery life.
It's
what the controller's up to. The more the haptics are in there, you got mechanical shit moving around in the controller. Guess what? That takes battery.
Again, massive praise to Helldivers, because everything you throw and fire, different haptic feedback, you can switch between, like, four different things at each any given time, and there's you kill millions of things a mission. The vibration is picking up in my microphone connection, so I have to do something about that. But anyway, sorry.
Is that because you're using the on controller mic?
No, I'm plugged into the controller. I had the shittiest headset mic ever that I've literally bought to play something with you guys like years ago. I very rarely.
Oh, so it's our fault.
It is definitely your fault.
All right.
And when I say bought, I didn't scan it at Walmart. So I did just hoping they wouldn't notice. Again, years ago, I don't do that anymore. The Walmart
trick
has been retired.
Apparently enough people did that. You're the reason we don't have self-checkout.
Yeah. Put a sticker of me next to every checkout kit, Joe Biden style. It says, I did that because I did. I did. Don't regret it at all. At all. Those CEOs have been making record profits, record salaries.
I wanted to talk a little bit about Children of the Sun, which is a game.
Please
that came
do.
Out last
Children
week.
Of the Sun.
Yeah. is that a Durst song?
It's a Rage Against the Machine.
Oh, okay. Your De La Roca is very similar to your Durst. I'm pointing this out right
now. Go listen to both. One raps better than the other.
So, Children of the Sun. I was introduced to this by someone saying, like, look, if you're one of those people who keep talking about, like, I want shorter games with worse graphics. Here you go. Put your money where your mouth is. I wouldn't say the graphics are bad by any stretch. This is a relatively short game. It has an art style, for sure. Everything's kind of weirdly colored, a little bit vapor wavy. But the Children of the Sun, like the title refers to a cult. And you are, it's hinted at in cutscenes, someone who was raised in this cult and was driven out of it. But guess what? You're a teenage girl with psychic sniper powers. And so you've got a sniper rifle and one bullet per stage. So the way that you do this is it borrows heavily from Killer 7 and Super Hot and a couple other things. And so you are on like a fixed path outside of like the perimeter of the people that you're stalking. And you need to circle around and try to spot everybody. You can tag them like Far Cry. And once you know how many targets there are, and like once you've counted up, like, okay, there's 7 guys here, then you take aim. And the idea is every time you shoot someone, the bullet will stop in midair, time will freeze, and you'll get to re-aim it from that position and shoot again. So what you need to do is make a family circus style path between all of your targets
and
follow it with this bullet. So just, you know, shoot one dude. Okay. There's another guy standing over here. He's next. Then there's another guy on the other side of this truck. You can hit him. Trucks and cars have gas tanks that you can target and blow them up. And that also counts as like another reorientation spot.
Burnout Crashbreaker vibes.
100%. Yeah. And like you can't really die, but you will fail if you don't kill everybody. And then you just start over. And like it gets later levels get really complex, like not to spoil too much, but the last level has a thing where it's like you have to kill these specific enemies to break a shield. And then once the shield is down, you can start targeting the next wave of enemies inside of it. It's kind of crazy, but it is short. I ended up playing through most of it in one night. and then went back and did the final level the next day. A strong recommend. If you get a chance to play this, check it out.
It's PC only, right?
It is PC only right now. Okay. Yeah. So if you've got Steam,
the Steam reviews are excellent.
Yeah, grab it. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, Children of the Sun, check it out.
Yeah, fuck the sun. I hate it too.
It's
it's an Adam Sandler quote from an old album, folks. You guys don't remember that skit where it's like the girl joins a cult that hates the sun. So he's like,
the nighttime is the right time. Yeah, the nighttime is the right time.
That's the one. Sorry, that's how my mind works.
Yeah. Look, speaking of cults, Fallout.
Yeah, trying to move on to that.
Crawl out in the Fallout. Baby.
Yeah. So Fallout, like, when did it actually come out? Like, it's a couple weeks old by now.
No,
right?
But no, it was like last
week. Only a week.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But they dropped every episode, which is something Amazon never does.
And actually, that's one. The only critique I've seen of the series is people saying, you know, this probably would have been better with a drip feed versus everything all at once, like, because there's tension, there's resolution between episodes or whatever, there's cliffhangers
The last season of The Boys, they dropped the first two, three episodes, and then, you know, I'm a fan of the weekly format.
I love that when we as a species have to relearn the old ways that aren't really that old in this day. Like, oh, there's a reason TV shows did this stuff weekly.
Well, we talk about things for longer. Yeah. Whereas, like, I'm going to have to ask. I'm enjoying the show. I'm going to watch more. I've seen two episodes. I don't want any spoilers. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure the listeners don't either.
Too bad.
No. I mean, the internet's been very good about not spoiling this. Like, you would normally expect, like, if the whole thing's out on day one, someone's going to watch the whole thing and start posting screen grabs.
Well, there's something to complain about in general, but, like, the Game of Thrones era showed that people were really good about that. Because, the Red Wedding, like, that was in a book from 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And what a surprise.
And all the book fans are like, oh, man, you're going to get it.
Yeah, you're going to love it. Well, that's sort of what I wondered as someone who's, like, I've never had more of a desire to get back into one of the Fallout games. The last one I played was 4. They're all not only on Game Pass, if you have Prime, they're all available through Luna.
And you're not the only one, by the way, because people, they've seen a resurgence both to that
300%, mobile game. 300%, I think it was
the mobile shelter game, and then I think they might have already released it, or they just announced that they're doing an upgrade to the games for, like, Xbox Series X to kind of fix some, like, 10-year-old bugs at this point that were going on, but also, like, improve graphics and frame rates.
It's big enough. I loaded up Game Pass, I guess, today or 2 days ago to play Harold Halibut, and the second tier is like, do you like Fallout? Here's every Fallout game, because Game Pass, you know, Microsoft now owns Fallout, and here's every fucking game. That's what they're highlighting before new releases. Here's every Fallout game.
So we won't spoil it for you because you are in episode 2. Here's the stuff I like, but all right.
Walton Goggins.
Well, Sir Walton Goggins is the best part. Walton Goggins. Of course.
Go underground, nerd.
If you like video game stuff with Easter eggs and references to the series,
then
the original games,
go outside, nerd.
This show is all Easter eggs and references. And to the point where I'm like, this is getting to be a bit much. But it's what it made me realize is, like, the story of Fallout games has never been great. I didn't play 1 and 2, so sorry, but whatevs.
I disagree.
It's been about world building. It's been a really cool universe.
The narrative is not always the main draw. Like, the story that you experience, that's different from the story that you discover in the world. Like, you know, when you say the story is not great, I think, like, all the shit in those vaults that you can discover, like, tells a very compelling
That's not the main story. That's not the main... And this series, to be honest, so far, at least for me, the main plot isn't the draw as much as, like, the side stuff, which, so this isn't really a spoiler, but, like, one of the things that happens a lot in Fallout games is you stumble upon an abandoned vault or where everyone's dead or whatever, and you kind of have to read terminals and uncover the mystery, like, what the hell happened here, you know, and the skeletons will be laid out in a way of, like, oh, these people are strangling each other. They're straight up, like, references to that in this show of, like, a dude going in.
That feeling is recreated.
Yeah, for sure.
What I want, like, what I'm most curious about, and I saw a couple news headlines about Bethesda clarifying, like, canon, blah, 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 canon. Like, this isn't super canonical with the Fallout story, but even, like, 3 and 4, like, how connected are they?
They're not really at all. Like, they're different, right? Vault dwellers. They're, mm-hmm.
They're different parts of the country. I think what Bethesda was saying is there have been people who, like, there are certain events that seem to undo or retcon things that happened in Fallout 2, New Vegas, especially. And I think people really are not expecting Bethesda to treat New Vegas as canon because it was produced by Obsidian, not by them. So there might be, like, some political considerations. But, yeah, what I think it was Todd Howard who said, like, no, this is all canon. All the games are canon. Everything that happened in the games happened before the TV series, including New Vegas.
And the cool part for me so far has been, I mean, it's canon in so much that, like, if you expect to see the Brotherhood of Steel, congrats, you're going to get rewarded. Like, you're going to see the Brotherhood of Steel, you know?
That shit, again, two episodes in, the stuff I didn't get to see in Star Wars with a black stormtrooper is being unfolded in front of me in this Fallout series.
Yeah. Well, it's also interesting, like, the Brotherhood of Steel, it's one of those things that's like, they're sort of a bunch of malevolent fascists. You don't necessarily realize that from the games until you step back and take a hard look at them. And I feel like the TV series really underlines that. It's like, these guys are assholes.
No, I've never joined them. I always were like, those guys are fascist assholes. Like, they're not the straight up antagonists of the series ever. They're just fascist assholes that are there. Like, you can side with that faction. Mm-hmm. It's probably not in your best interest.
You can get their help sometimes. You're pretty useful, but
they have a lot of good tech. Yeah.
I got more, but I hesitate to say benevolent fascists because, again, the TV series makes it very clear they're hostile to outsiders.
When it really leans into the religious overtones of the group. The whole, 100%. Like, how they refer to each other and, like, what they're doing is almost like with the biblical drive. Like, no, we have to do this to restore order and blah, blah, blah. And
that's what I love about the series so far is the really important details of what I really like about sci-fi. Don't want to say factions, but, like, this is what life is like in a disconnected world between these different people. And that's what I really liked about Fallout. You walk into Megaton and everyone tells you, like, this is what's going on over here. I'm like, Jesus Christ. Here's what we think of your people. Holy shit.
Its strength is world building, and the show really leans into that. It also leans into just, it's a reminder to me of, like, those games are, if nothing, if not, like, absurdist humor, you know, like.
The show is so funny.
It's funny, but it's also, everything's exaggerated. Like, literally in the games, of course, it's a video game, so you're going to blow a hole in someone.
Yeah.
There are, like, scenes in the show where it's like literal holes are blown in people.
Walton Goggins, the ghoul, definitely has the bloody mess perk.
Is he in the game?
He's not in the game.
I mean, ghouls are in the game.
It's one of those things I keep harping on. We live in a streaming world. We're going to take chances that have never occurred on television before. And, like, where's the violence, man? And other than the boys, I haven't seen any until this.
It's
like,
all over this.
Until this.
Hyper-violent.
Yeah, and that's one thing I mentioned to you guys. It was like, this might be the first video game adaptation I've seen where healing items work in the series exactly the way they do in the games. Like, give me a stim pack. Oh, I'm brought back from death's door now. I'm fine.
One of my favorite cameos, by the way, in that moment, but, like, a stim, I was like, VGA might have to go back in time. Like, who was the first one? I know what a stim is because I use them in Helldivers and Fallen Order, but I never heard that till video games.
Stim packs.
Where does the stim come from?
It also reminds you of how many drugs are in the Fallout game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't engage with it that much in those games. It's like, maybe. It's like how I save up every power-up item I have in games till the end, and I never use them and go, oh, shit. It's like, I've had, like, 18 hyper jets or whatever in my inventory. I didn't use any of them. That would have made every fight so much easier. No, in the show, they just straight up were like, this motherfucker's running at you because he just inhaled some crazy drug and now he's in an unstoppable berserker mode or whatever. You know?
Yeah.
I got it. I feel like this is working.
Walton Goggins' character, by the
way. Walton Goggins is the shit, and I hope everyone discovers it.
We've been saying that the last 10 things he's in.
that shit with him as a Civil War apologist and like, get out my... Hey, y'all got me talking politics. I'm just going to sleep. Put my sleepy hat on.
Michael did correctly point out, he does go full Baby Billy occasionally with the accent in this.
Mm-hmm. It is one... I feel like I like this... The first two episodes so much, I'm going to watch the rest of it. And you ever watch
it? Is it eight? Eight total?
Eight, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you mean there's a bunch of games about this world? And, like, I'll have a little more context, and I might... There's a very real chance I might end up becoming... playing through a Fallout game for the first time ever. I'm super weirded out by it because of how nice Bethesda has been with mods to its game to improve it. I have played... most of my Fallout games on PC. I don't play on PC much anymore. But I know they have Xbox. The Xbox One had mods. I don't know if that's still a thing.
That was Fallout... Was it 4 that introduced the mod thing? And I think eventually that did go away. They were just...
Okay.
Remember there was a whole payment controversy where like the creators... Right. Like,
How were they being compensated? But like now that's what I'm nervous about is like... Again, I think the games have always been a little janky for my taste.
Mod in this game?
No. The games have always been a little, you know, undercooked, in my opinion.
Well, that's that. Yeah, the one unrealistic thing about the TV show is so far my TV hasn't frozen and done a hard reboot while I was watching an episode. So.
I actually started playing a little bit of 76 last night. And they have a new intro that I don't remember being there the last time I picked it up, where you're in the vault and they just, like, make a big deal, like... Look, everyone else has already left. You've been here for months. Don't you think it's time for you to leave the vault too?
Was it Lauren Boebert going, this is 1776?
War has changed, y'all. Yeah.
But in the starting area, like, you know, I'm just kind of like wandering around like, yeah, this is a very different sort of Fallout world than I'm used to. Like, there's a bunch of trees everywhere. It's still very green. And then like a bunch of ghouls swarm me. And somebody swoops in and saves my ass and shoots the ghouls. And I'm like, oh, who's this character? And then they start bunny hopping. It's like, fuck, it's another player. The worst.
Yeah, I'm not brave enough to try Fallout 76. Although all of my Fallout friend fans have come out of the woodwork and played it 6 times, 5 times. Even people in their 40s I'm talking about. And 76 has apparently been... You know, like most live games should be, almost a decade into their...
It's been very much improved since
very
its
much
launch.
Improved.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, but ask me what the hell's going on in Elder Scrolls Online. I don't care.
Now, I swear, the reason I don't play that, Bethesda still sends me... Nobody in the video games industry sends me emails except for Elder Scrolls Online. That's how I know they're desperate.
You know why I don't play it? Because you can't roll bears and cheese wheels down mountainsides.
God damn it. Like good Lord Todd Howard intended.
At least you couldn't at launch. Maybe they've added that since then. I don't know. I'm not playing
But the Fallout show, like, I would only, like, I'm curious. It doesn't seem terribly expensive, but the utility of the design of the sets and the clothes, most of the CG is used for blood and, like, what do you call that? Establishing shots of like the landscape, which the characters are almost never in vast landscapes of nothingness. And as far as I've seen, they're in sets. The sets are gorgeous. It looks like the Waterworld show at Universal every 7 seconds.
Some of the stuff, maybe this is just me, but like, because it's meant to look almost cartoony, like this weird hype, surrealistic thing. It's like, it almost, like, the costume stuff almost look cheap because of that. It's like the cut, but I know they're not cheap. Like, I know it's expensive.
No, they're supposed to look otherworldly. And the amazing opening sequence sets it up as this alternate 1950s.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the thing that, like, I wonder, like, how are they going to communicate? This is actually, it's not supposed to be the 50s. It's supposed to be the 2070s. Like, in a world where, like, an alternate universe where we never evolved beyond the 50s, culturally speaking.
You mean when the bombs fell in the Fallout universe?
Yeah, it's supposed to be 2077.
I'm not kidding. Right. I did this in conjunction with Harold Halibut and just, like, you know, the apocalypse happens. Like, I can make a fire. You know what I can't make? A wire.
Mm.
I cannot make a wire, and I cannot stretch it across the landscape, and that will not happen for a very... Love thinking about that shit, and that's what the whole show is sort of wrapped in. Like, why didn't someone just call the... Because you can't, you dumb-dumb. Everything sucks now. Mm-hmm. I'm having a blast with the show. I think it's thoroughly worthwhile.
If you want a show full of fan service, then... From playing those games, like, this is it. They got Pip-Boys, they got Rads. You know,
well directed, well written, well acted.
The fan service, because I forgot, years ago I got one of the Vault shirts. Do you still have your Vault shirt, Michael? Can you still fit in it?
No.
The yellow collar 33. The Pip-Boy bobblehead is like in the first 10 seconds, and that's like something they sent all game journals. I'm like, that's just a thing in the show. Yep. Holy shit.
Yeah, well, you also could collect them in the game.
You could collect them.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not picking up on a bunch of the Easter eggs or relations to the games because I'm just not very familiar.
They're everywhere in
the
show.
Apparently. but that's the good thing about Easter eggs, because you could think that pandering, I am not noticing, and it's not diminishing my experience in any way.
Yeah.
So I'm saying this for non-Fallout fans. It's like the best show on TV right now.
It's that and Shogun. Yeah, those are
Shogun. I need to watch that.
Shogun rules.
Mm-hmm. Heard the last episode was amazing.
And I love the new meme where it's like a dude saying something over, like, very offensive or overly long and complex, and then just the female translator with the one line that, like, makes what he said the polite version. Mm-hmm. Oh, I love it.
What did I just watch? So The Sympathizer. I was watching that on HBO. Very dense. That's the one where Robert Downey Jr. is like the only American white actor, and he plays seven different people. It looks insane. And it's done by the Old Boy guy. Cannot wait to see more of it. Because other than that, I've only been watching Curb and catching up on Gen V because my barber told me it was the shit and The Boys is coming out again.
Is it the shit? Should I watch that?
It's not bad, but it's not, you know, it's not... The Boys to me was always one... am I tired of this MCU thing? Perfect anecdote. It's playing the same universe and doing things Marvel would never, ever do, and discussing things Marvel would never talk about. Gen V is like, what is it like for young people? Yeah. Voight sucks. eight episodes, but apparently you need to know that before you go into the new season. But Fallout, I really feel like you don't need to know anything. I've just been transfixed by it. And I was at a bar, which I don't go to often, and I think my friend just bought this bar, and he's like me, and I had been to this bar before. It's a huge douchebag bar. I think people would do coke off the balconies and shit, and didn't like it much there. Every person I've dated and didn't like would go there, and then I walk in, and it's just like, they're playing Shaun of the Dead, and silently is the Fallout TV show, and like... Yeah, like, I know bars and restaurants, we got to put on something universal. Why not sports? Like, I don't think sports are as universal. They don't feel universal to me. If you put on Silently Fallout and I go to the bartender, like, what do you have? And like, blah, 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 blah. He's like, is that the Fallout show? He's like, dude, it fucking rips. Like, this, the bartender could not stop talking about the Fallout show. Do not watch the next scene that happens. I shouldn't even be playing it. I just think it sets a good vibe. I'm like, I'm going to come back to this fucking bar again because... This is the kind of conversation I want to have with a stranger.
Nice.
About the Fallout show. And it was a really... Again, I'm having a great time with it. I don't think it's up there with... The Last of Us has that HBO quality, but...
But it's different. It's going for a different vibe, and
it is.
Yeah,
it's accomplishing,
like,
that.
I was thinking about this, and some critic said, like, there's nothing else like this on television. And I would actually say, like, I don't think there's ever been... Like, other than the last season of Miracle Workers, there has not been, like, wasteland apocalypse fiction that is actually kind of lighthearted.
Yeah.
Like, that isn't just relentlessly grim.
Yes, it is. It is fucking... And, you know, that is... The games are sort of like that. They do have that vibe. A little bit of humor. But, like, the most you'll get humor in Last of Us, like, I just killed my brother, but a bird shit on my shoe. There are days and there are days. Mm-hmm. Ugh, Last of Us.
Miracle Workers was with Daniel Radcliffe and Steve Buscemi. And
preacher one.
Sort of. Western one? That was, like, the previous season. They do, like, a different theme every season. And the last season, because it's now canceled, was, like... an apocalypse wasteland where, like, you know, Daniel Radcliffe is like a Mad Max character, and he's married to a warlord, and they try to live in like a shitty little shanty town.
I'll shut up about it, but if you remove the name Fallout from the show, mm-hmm. and that's based on a game, this would still really blow my skirt up.
Yeah,
it's fucking awesome.
This would be really good.
It's everything I ever wanted from TV, and it's just the right amount of expensive and violence and unexpectedness and humor and great sets, great costumes. Please check out the Fallout show. And I'm as pissed as anyone. I renewed my Amazon Prime account on accident last month.
Well, now you get to watch the next season, I guess.
I just wanted to steal my dad's as they charge me more and show me ads. I did not try and make a haiku or a poem out of that,
all right.
But I did.
Let's move on to news.
News. Tell me the news, Matt.
Can't wait for the sound.
Oh. Too late, I'm dead.
Got cobwebs growing all over my skeleton.
Yeah, I adhere to the format. This and this. Look what happens. This is a story. It's kind of the repeat of a story we've talked about before, but different retailer this time. So Target is responding to reports that it was abandoning all physical media. They clarified, basically saying that games are fine, games are not affected, but they are pivoting so that only select DVDs will be carried in stores and around select times, like you can imagine holiday season when people are out buying gifts for other people. Doesn't mean Target is no longer selling physical DVDs, it means that they're selling them on Target.com.
Right.
What this is just like, yeah, there's going to be less shelf space for DVDs and other physical media, and the biggest sellers will be there in stores or at select times. They'll maybe have a few more, but like if you want to find a DVD, you're probably going to have to buy it and have them ship it to you. And that's just the way all of this is working.
That's the opposite of Best Buy, because I think you cannot buy them on their website anymore.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, boy.
I did see somebody pointing out that, like, yeah, I kind of just thought they were only selling movies, like, you know, when studios have a new movie coming out and they buy space on the end caps at the around the registers, basically, so to turn it into an impulse buy.
It is. If you haven't, I'm at Target way too much, thanks to my lady. Very happy with it. It's not an insult. But it's never felt more like comic books. If you're there next week,
you're right, it's like comic books at the grocery store where it's just on a rack.
It's a very, very, like, it was greatly diminished, so like there's no classics section. Like, do you want to go buy the Avengers or Citizen Kane? You're fucked. It is like whatever's new or whatever they're like basing a campaign around. Like, have you seen that at Walmart and Target? They'll like change covers for multiple studios so you can buy this set so they have matching covers or steelbooks. They'll do that, but like it is not a robust, it's weird. It is like whatever's new or whatever's being highlighted, and it's like eight, I would say 4 or 5 dozen movies at any given time.
Sorry, you saying that just made me think, like, well, you know, I'll grab this copy of Avengers Endgame, but where's your classic section? It's like, oh, you mean like the first Avengers movie? It's right over here.
I don't know how to fault them for that. One of the things I wanted to, like, just yell about for a second. We have a lot to yell about as Americans or people across the globe with inflation. 4K Blu-rays. I have a 4K Blu-ray player. You do too, if you have a PS5 or an Xbox Series X. Series X? Xbox Series?
Series
Jesus
X.
Christ.
Series S doesn't have a Blu-ray drive.
Series X and Xbox One X. They are $15 more expensive. And I know your mastering process might have been like $1 million more, but I don't think it translates to hundreds of discs being 15. These are the same things. They're plastic with a layer in between.
Well, honestly, like that's the only physical media I buy anymore,
right?
Because like if I'm buying this, like it shifted away from it being just an impulse buy, where it's just like if I buy a movie, it's because I want like the best version of that movie and I want the special features. So yeah, I'll pay a little extra for the 4K.
I'm not subbed to Disney Plus. I steal my dad's HBO and like this is, and I click on something like, this is available in 4K if your subscription allows it. And like, I don't know what the fuck it, what?
Well, the days of like DVDs or buying movies being for the masses are over. And so what they're doing now is just like, yeah, for the masses, streaming's good enough. It's just for collectors, and that's why they're charging you more, saying, well, yeah, there's lower demand overall, but the people who are buying them are more collector mentality. They're willing to spend a little bit more, to Michael's point, to get the best version. So it's like, I get why they're doing it, but it's just because that shit isn't mass like it was, whatever, 15 years ago.
You know? I still think a $40 movie is outrageous.
I imagine if you're buying just the DVD, it's probably still relatively cheap. But if you're buying
a
Blu-ray
DVD, you can walk in there with a fistful of pennies, throw it at the cashier, and they'll hand you an armful.
They'll probably be like, here, stuff this down your pants and walk out.
Well, the other thing we got to remember, though, is like, okay, in relation to what a movie ticket price is, like movie tickets, if you want to go see the big, awesome IMAX version, $25.
$20. Yep. Yeah.
So it's like, in relation
even
to that.
Even if you don't,
okay,
it's still like $20. At least
I guess just a regular movie is, what, 17? Depending on the chain, depending on where you are.
I think I said that on our Bonus Time podcast. I went to go see Godzilla Minus One, and my card got hacked, so my AMC A-list got canceled. So my free movies with my monthly sub, and to buy one for me and my girl, I'm like, $48 for one movie? Eat my dick. Mm-hmm. Holy God. Which, by the way, big plug, biggest plug I'll say in the show. Don't edit this out. Godzilla Minus One, May 3rd, Amazon Prime. Hell yeah.
Oh, which version, though? Is it the
both.
Black and white?
Both, is it both?
Oh, well, I have heard the black and white version is coming, so I would assume that also means the color version. Yes.
Quick update, too. Saw Ghostbusters a second time. Does not hold up on the second viewing. It's fine, but it's...
Which one?
The new Ghostbusters.
No.
You saw it a second time?
My kid wanted to see it. And I didn't have the heart. I waited until the movie was almost over, and I was like, yeah, Dad's seen this one. They were like, what? They were so upset.
I've done that before with my friend's kids, and like, I love walking out of a movie, and you don't want to tell a kid, like, that sucked. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of the movie? It was great. It was the greatest movie ever made. You are correct.
My dad was not shy about that. He, you know, was hated seeing the Transformers movie with me, and he was like, that was just a commercial for Transformers.
In this case, my kid was the one like, this is kind of getting boring. And I said, it gets better toward the end. It was like, well, how do you know? I've seen it in IMAX. Anyway.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh,
so, shit.
I think if I never told you guys this during my biggest scam days during the pandemic, the girl I was dating, like, let's buy some red collared shirts, put a work belt around ourselves, get a ladder, and I'm stealing the giant Mario thing over Target's video game section. I am stealing it, and I'm taking it home, and I'll never come in this Target again.
Oh, my God. You set me up for the best transition to the next news item ever.
Okay.
Go for it.
Because, Chris, if you did that shit in Japan...
Oh!
That's like a life sentence, because there's a man, a 36-year-old in Japan, has been arrested by Japanese police on suspicion of, this is the best, just tampering with Pokemon Violet save data.
What?
And selling that shit.
What?
So this is a practice that's banned under the country's Unfair Competition Prevention Act, which is passed in 2019. This is as reported by NHK News, translated by Automaton. The suspect was apprehended by police on April 9th after a police cyber patrol, I'm reading this from IGN, discovered evidence that the individual had used special tools to illegally modify save data for Pokemon Violet. Here's the thing. He's not getting arrested for that. He was then selling the illegally modified Pokemon save data online to other people.
To me, this just seems like cheating. How is this different from, say, gold farming?
It's not.
He was only selling it, I think it was 80, he was getting like $85 a pop. It was like basically selling saves, like, here, you're going to get the rare Pokemon in this game.
I mean, I thought on our YouTube channel, which, by the way, none of you assholes appreciated and it's dead. Fuck off. but we got a modded 3DS, and the interest in America when 3DS was out was, you know, cool. In Japan, it was insane. And there was like two guys who modded 3DSs, and like, they didn't charge a lot, but they had a massive waiting list. And it to the point where, like, if you're coming through Japan and can pay me in person, you might go to the... And I got... Someone did that for me. Because they're shut down so fast. Their laws... Hey, this guy can't keep doing this shit. I don't know how he kept operating. Because, like, I need some software from him and some guide from him, and he's gone. He is fucking gone. But, yeah, the Japanese audience is obviously much more rabid about the Pokemon shit. And you can see why there'd be laws there. I mean, I'm not saying they're fair laws. I'm not. Yeah, fuck that shit. It's a stupid fake game. Who cares?
Do you want to hear what sentence he could be facing?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
This, right. So, again, modifying save files to give people rare Pokemon could net you up to 5 years in prison.
Jesus!
And wow. Or a fine of up to 5 million yen, which is equivalent of $32,600.
Wow.
That seems really fashy, but the country is really clean and nice, so I don't know if I'm going to complain.
Fuck around and find out. Don't sell modified Pokemon data, apparently.
I guess. That seems like a very minor crime, if it's a crime at all.
I mean, if it would be a crime anywhere, like, it's a very serious part of the economy with a company with a ton of power in that state. So it does seem weird to me as an American, because, like, everybody does. China doesn't give a shit at all about that kind of stuff. That's where gold farming is based for the most part.
Well, here's something that as an American doesn't seem weird to you, but does seem weird to the rest of the world, Chris.
Ooh, tipping.
Tipping culture is fucking out of control in America.
Like cows?
Yes, cow tipping. Yes. Giving people money for services rendered.
Oh!
It is a practice that when you travel internationally, you learn there are different tipping rules in different countries. Some countries don't do it because, guess what? They pay their employees enough to not have to live off fucking tips.
I've heard there's certain countries in Europe, they're like fucking offended. Like,
it's just not common. So they're like, what are you doing? Here's your change. And you're like, no, you keep that. They're like, why?
Don't bribe me. I won't fuck you. What does this mean?
right. So one of the ex-heads of Blizzard, Mike Ybarra, who was, I think, most recently at Microsoft, he had a hot take online that said, hey, basically, I know this is an unpopular take, and I know these games are $70 already. I think he's talking about, like, Baldur's Gate 3 and Elden Ring. He's like, but I'd love an option at the end of games where, like, players could just, like, you know, tip the devs. That's not how any of this works, sir.
No, that went over about as well as you'd think it would on the socials.
Well, because here's the thing is, like, sure, yeah, I would love a system where if the money goes to those devs that I want to reward, sure. Like, yeah, you're awesome. Betting where it's going. Nope. That money's just going straight to the top and and this trickle down economics thing.
Yeah.
For a trickle or two.
As people have pointed out, like, depending on the company, the devs that made it might already be gone.
yeah, there's that too. There's that too. But also, like,
there's one case where that ever worked, and it's WinRAR for some reason.
but this is the thing: is like we have a perfectly serviceable business model. It's you charge me for stuff. I pay the price that you're charging me.
Yeah,
and I get the good that I'm being charged for. End of transaction.
Yeah, our business is concluded.
Business is concluded. It's like what Mitch Hedberg used to say, like. I don't need a receipt for the donut. I can never imagine a scenario where I need to prove that I bought a donut. You know.
Like, well, I think what he was saying.
I get what he's saying. Yeah, I mean.
But you're saying something that I don't think is in the article. That, like, when I can, like, it's about love, and when you love a game, you can't show a game the same form of love you show your partner. Or your family, you can only spend more.
You tip and when your you partner.
Love, I mean, look at, I disagree with that. Look at fan communities. Look at fan artists. The things that they do.
No. Sorry. What I'm saying is that, but games are about love. And when you love a game, you want to, like, I want to support this. And so, like, if you. You know, you're a Warcraft fan, you see a fucking doll in a store, like, shit, yeah, this game fucking rules. I'll buy this doll. And then Matt is right. None of that goes to the devs ever. A tip in live service games, I'm buying the DLC. Like, I don't even know if I like it, but I've had such a good experience. Like, I'm there with Helldivers, even though I haven't spent a cent, because you can earn currency so easily in the game, you don't have to. But my friends are, because he keeps buying stupid suits and cosmetics. yeah, I'm having such a great time. I don't mind spending $5 once a month. That doesn't bother me at all. That might go directly to developers, but like, I see what he's saying. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I get it.
It's really hard to tip the devs to make sure the devs get an increase unless the studio heads demand, like...
Well, yeah, all you can do is hope they put out DLC and then say, I'm going to buy the DLC. Like, Elden Ring. I pre-ordered the DLC. I never pre-order DLC, but it's like, I loved Elden Ring so much, they have my confidence and my faith, like, this is going to be excellent, and I want to give more money for anything Elden Ring at this point.
Right. I'm only saying, and I'm not trying to construe his comment in any way, he didn't mean it, but like, when we as gamers are showing our love for a franchise, the only way we can do that is like merch and like, well, I'll buy the fucking album. That doesn't go to the devs. Like, it doesn't do that. It's just like, it's just extra revenue for the company.
Yep. Well, that's the thing, is it's like, this guy knows better. He's been on the inside. He's been on dev teams. And it's just like, I understand the sentiment. Like, yes, yeah, you want to reward the people for a thing you love.
No, it's not impossible. And it's also like nicer than like the idea of like, I don't want to buy a stupid cosmetic to support you. I would just like to give you extra money because I'm enjoying this experience and I want to keep playing. And
I think what people are responding to is it's like what we were talking about, where like in other countries, people just make enough money where they don't need to tip. Like, why is it up to the average Joe, the consumer, to be the one to supplement the income of these people? Like, what? No, hold on. You know, you got corporations in place for this kind of thing, right? Why is it my burden?
I've worked on a ton of games. I never, that Metacritic thing where everyone gets a bonus. Never got that at all. In all honesty, like, many of us would like to tip devs, and even if you hadn't thought about it, like, yeah, why wouldn't I tip the people? Why shouldn't the people who made this thing I love get more money? And that there's not really any mechanism to do that.
Nope.
At this point.
Nope. It's like, if you really love a band, you can buy their merch. Things like Bandcamp, like you can tip bands there, that cause there is a method, like a direct to creator payment system. Right. But, Game dev has never been like that. No.
So I see what he's saying. Just because like a crowd that we're living in a crowdfunded era, you know, this endeavor is mildly crowdfunded, and like that doesn't exist yet.
It kind of does, but only for indies like Itch.io. I think you can just pay more than what they're asking.
Sure.
For a thing.
And Humble, you can do that. You can do that too, but you have to do that in advance.
I think you can go back on Itch.io and just give people money for a thing, but it was making the rounds because it's like, it's also like a dude who's an exec in the game industry saying something like that is like, anywho.
I get it. Coming from a guy who probably makes six figures, if not more figures, doesn't sound great.
He makes all the figures.
All the figures.
Oh, man. Last bit of news here. Nintendo is apparently skipping Gamescom 2024. Not their first Gamescom they've ever skipped, by the way. They have skipped previous years. I think Sony has skipped the last 2 years of Gamescom.
Nintendo generally skips Gamescom.
No. They've been there. They're there quite regularly. It's just what this is more probably an indicator of is if they have a robust holiday release schedule, none of that stuff's been announced yet. Mm-hmm. This is most people speculating, like, yeah, they're holding off and waiting. They're prepping for whatever their next system launch will be. And that's when all the new exciting Nintendo games will come out. And like,
holy shit, I didn't even think about that. That Nintendo's last couple of pieces of hardware need to be touched to be experienced. Mm. Whereas Sony's and Microsoft, like, yeah, we got all the flops. And this solid state stuff, trust us. Yeah. It isn't a see it to believe it kind of thing.
It's a great point.
We came at a 3DS thing, like, you don't understand. It's really hard to describe that this works. Yeah. It works, and everybody wanted to know. But they might not be confirming because they can't tell you what any of this new shit is.
So I just looked it up. Nintendo skipped Gamescom in 2022, so fairly recent. PlayStation has skipped 2022 and 2023. It basically, I think Nintendo's strategy is if we don't have a big thing to show, we're not going to spend it. It's very expensive to go to events and to set up booths. And
when does Gamescom? Summer?
It is always around Labor Day weekend, so like late August, early September, typically.
Oh, when I'm at the Dave Matthews Band concert, where was that Memorial
Is
Day?
That where you are? Like,
no, never.
Are you me back in college?
Never.
Matt,
I was a Daver.
I was a Daver in college. He used to sing like this, and we loved it.
17 underpaid black guys with saxophones.
Michael, it's your turn to sing like Dave Matthews.
Pass.
I mean, that was just an SNL sketch with was it JJ Casuals? Is that what it's called?
Oh.
It was like him, Jack Johnson, and anywho. But yeah, so read into this if you like. It could be an indication, or it could just mean Nintendo doesn't have a thing to show and they want to save some money. Either way, it's a story that's been the news. That's everything that's fit
to
play.
Yeah, it might, like on a broader sense, it might be worrisome. Like everyone's seeming to point that there's going to be a new console by the end of the year, and it's kind of getting a little late to announce it.
That's a great point as well. Like you would, yeah. Yes.
It's getting a little late.
It's April. I mean, we're used to shit not being announced until E3, so...
It's getting too late to announce it.
And there's no E3 because Michael killed it.
Oh, yeah, me personally. Jab my dagger.
Now there's just Summer Games Fest.
Well, let's move on to the community segment, which is always is segmenting our community. Last week's question of the week, you might remember, was... what's your favorite Metroidvania that we didn't talk about in the top five? Tell us what we missed. So on Facebook, Bree Stafford says, my favorite game of all time is Hollow Knight. Mm. And Matt's complete and utter disdain for it.
It wasn't disdain.
Makes me
what
sad.
What the fuck is this? I never said I didn't. But, I just said the game didn't catch with me. It's fine.
But.
That's not disdain.
I'm here to talk about Gato Roboto.
Ooh.
This is a great game. I can verify. It's a cat in a mech power suit. How can this be bad? The game is an homage to classic Metroid, but it remains unique with clever. It expertly uses the fact that not only are you playing a humanoid-shaped character, a little cat can pop out of the humanoid's head and do the tiny things that humans can't normally do. Though the game is very short, they are able to pack in a very compelling story between the cat and the trapped explorer, as well as some epic boss battles. It's the perfect game to play when someone has the Metroidvania itch but doesn't have time to play a traditionally paced game of that genre.
Mm.
So it's like Blaster Master, but with a robotic cat.
Kind of, yeah, actually.
Also, missed opportunity. The song in the trailer totally should have been Domare Gato. Gato Roboto.
Gato Roboto. With Tony Hale.
You know that's the inspiration.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Oh, you got to read this one, Chris.
Chris Baker says, I think you asked this about 7 years ago. My answer remains the same. The little brother, Nintendo DS versions of Spider-Man Web of Shadows and Shattered Dimensions, were both fantastic Metroidvanias from Griptonite that featured some of the most fun 2D combat I have ever experienced on the system, teamed with exploring a map on the lower screen that was very clearly inspired by the Castlevania titles. Each game took narrative inspiration from the console versions with their own spins. like different helper characters in Web of Shadows, Green Goblin and Nightcrawler. And cross-dimensional nature of Sharded Dimensions playing into how each of the three universes, not four, sorry, Ultimate, it's part of the main. Worlds opened up at something like 4 hours each. They're pretty short, but they're still definitely worth checking out while they're still relatively cheap.
4 hours each, there's your problem.
I mean, those...
You're trying to sell a DS.
Yeah, at that point, they would have been $30. Yeah. That was always the problem. That's why Nintendo had to ban in their handhelds, because like at the end of the day, like we need $40. That's what every 3DS game should be, including Cave Story, which was a $10 game.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, dude, that's why the DSi with the digital shop was huge at the time. Like, oh shit, you can pay less than $30 or $40 for a handheld game.
Amazing.
Let's see, from the threads.net, Pat Imbo 3D says, ooh, I like this one. The Mummy Demastered. It's the best thing that came out of the Dark Universe. I mean, not that it's a particularly high bar to clear, Hell, it might be one of the best movie tie-in games ever.
Also, yeah. Way Forward.
Second that. That was great.
Also, Way Forward, and I would like to point out, I said the Zelda movie gives me vaporware vibes. The Zelda movie gives me Dark Universe vibes.
Oh, man.
Uh-oh.
That's you
more than time. Anything.
I remember the Mummy Demaster did a really cool thing, which is that every time you would die, you would have to do a corpse run, except your corpse was now a zombie that was running around with all the power-ups you died with, and you were basically reset to zero, so you had to fight it to get your power-ups back. The problem is that was so fucking difficult some of the time. I think I finally just gave up on the game. Like, yeah, I lost my cool shit. I can't get it back from my zombie corpse. Yeah, I give up. Set it aside and play something else less challenging for a while. CSL 316.
316. That's CSL 316, Michael.
CSL 316. All right.
I just whooped your ass.
Steam World Dig 2, which a couple people said, like, why didn't you guys talk about this? Because we never played it. Steam World Dig 2, the first.
I did.
Oh, okay, fine. You should have spoken up. The first had a fun loop, but the second turned it into a structured game. It's focused on exploration and upgrading your gear rather than combat, so it's just fun to dig. It always feels like you're making progress, making it really hard to put down. You keep finding new stuff while listening to great music, and not a moment is wasted. It's not super long, so it's an easy game to replay every few years. All the SteamWorld games are really well made, but Dig 2 is the best.
I mean, yeah, I think they announced... SteamWorld has always benefited from the second iteration. They announced Heist 2 this week, I think.
Oh, did they? Oh, man, yeah. I'm there for that.
The Dig games are great. It's like, what if Dig Dug was a good game and not this weird bullshit arcade game?
Dig Dug is lovely.
I love Dig Dug.
I don't care about Dig Dug. I really don't care about Dig Dug.
I love Dig. Laserpiece on the blue ski, blue sky. I'm surprised you guys didn't talk more about Batman Arkham Asylum. Mm. It was always one of my favorite Metroidvania games. I loved exploring Arkham, finding Riddler trophies, and doing stealth takedowns on enemies. Also, that they brought back Kevin Conroy and Mark Hamill to voice their roles.
The reason, sir, we didn't talk about this is our rules was we were just talking about 2D or 2.5D
right.
Metroidvania.
I suppose we could have talked about Blackgate, the 3DS game, but I never liked that very much.
And I didn't consider Arkham Asylum a Metroidvania until like 10 years after it came out. Like,
it totally is.
It blew my mind. Like, oh, yeah, it is. It's a great 3D Metroidvania, the best since Prime.
It's Metroidvania.
Okay, from the Twitter, at GumbyXGames says, the Blaster Master series, specifically the NES original and the first of the Zero trilogy. As a kid, my best friend and I would play his copy whenever we hung out after church. When I played Zero back on 2017, all those memories came flooding back. It combines the stories of the U.S. Blaster Master game and Japanese original into an interesting story in the vein of the Castlevania, I see what you did there, GBA games. Zero, two, and three have planet hopping, but Zero, one is closer to the Metroidvania formula, work one giant interconnected map. I bought Zero, one, and two three times, and three twice, digital, physical, and trilogy, physical release. I may have a problem. I don't think any of the games in the series get the love and acclaim they deserve, except Blaster Master 2 and BM Overdrive.
Yeah, Bowel Movement Overdrive.
Thank you. Same joke. Those were pretty bad, just like our joke.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm totally with you. Like, I think we streamed that game, the first Zero, but I remember like right when I was kind of bailing on the games industry, in my heart, I guess. but like, yeah, I don't remember how. Like, I'm invited to this Nintendo thing at the Metreon, and it was for Blaster Master Zero, and every employee was wearing Sunsoft shirts. I'm like, oh my god, is everything right with the world? Is Sunsoft back?
It was because
of Zero. They were trying to give us them vibes.
If you know the history of the Metreon, that is like blasphemous to hold a Nintendo event there. This is the place that was built by Sony and used to have a PlayStation store.
Yeah, and was featured in a level of Jet Li Rise to Honor, the PS2 game.
And had the biggest abandoned arcade I've ever seen, by the way. Two stories.
And was also hosted the Walk of Game, which was, you know, supposed to be the game industry's answer to Hollywood's Walk of Fame. And I was at the inaugural ceremony that and almost shoved Nolan Bushnell off of a catwalk on the third floor.
He's a very feeble man, Michael. Don't do that.
I almost bumped into him. It was just a narrow catwalk. Anyway, no. Chuck,
we all know the way he needs to die is a giant robot will crush him to death.
Of course.
That is
yes.
his fate. He was the Chuck E. Cheese guy.
Yeah.
yes. Nolan Bushnell should be Five Nights at Freddy's, is what Matt said.
Yeah.
Double man.
Chuck Mangione, which is Chuck Mang, numeral 1-O-N-E, exclamation, says, Mangione says, Chasm, the movement and inventory of this game is very reminiscent of Symphony of the Night. Its most unique feature is that portions of each area are procedurally generated. This is an underappreciated game that I think Castlevania fans would enjoy.
I've never heard of Chasm.
No, I haven't either.
Me either. Chasmvania. I have nothing clever
Chris,
to say.
Chris, go play it. You were the blasphemous guy, so go play Chasm now. Let us know.
So, new question of the week. Is there a video game movie in development or in development hell that you're looking forward to seeing? You know, I think Metroid would probably be at the top of my list.
Why?
I don't know, because it's just been on the back burner for so long. I'm curious to see what someone would do with it. Yeah, I think it would be difficult to do well, but I'm still very curious. I've been curious since 2004, 20 years of waiting for this shit. Let's see someone make it.
Man, I don't even know where to go here, because Gears of War was one of them. But I there were a couple of things we didn't point out that I wanted to. One was that a long time ago, I did a feature for OXM, the official Xbox magazine, about what video games movies do wrong. And the movie that did the things the least wrong was the Silent Hill movies.
Mm.
And they're both well-received and made money, like unlike most video game movies, because UA Bull was... It's a different show, but if we talk about him. But yeah, we talked about off mic that like... Warren Ellis had written a Castlevania script 20 years ago that Netflix credited him and turned it into a new show. Nothing is seemingly off the table, but like I don't know what... There's a new Silent Hill movie in development, right, Michael?
Yeah, so I kind of want to change my answer because that was just something off the cuff. But yes, the Silent Hill 2 movie, like back when Christoph Gans, the director who did Brotherhood of the Wolf, adapted the first Silent Hill, he was saying, well, like, he's doing this because the story that he really wanted to tell was the story of Silent Hill 2, which is like he talked about it like it was this very beautiful thing, like it's a version of the myth of Orpheus descending into hell to retrieve Eurydice, and you know it's James
right.
going into Silent Hill to find his dead wife.
Love Star Wars. What'd you say?
It's Greek myth. Come on, Orpheus. But so I'm just pleased that he's finally getting to make this movie after almost 20 years.
Well, he's getting a chance to write it, but like, what else is Konami doing? God, just let him make a movie. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'm also, I realize like, I had originally planned to put the Metal Gear movie on the top five. I'm not sure why I didn't make it.
Again, I say no. There's there like...
You don't want to see Oscar Isaac as Solid Snake?
No, I do.
Yeah.
But... I think, and I don't have many criticisms of the Metal Gear Solid franchise, but you will see the narrative criticisms held in stark light by what they do in the movies. This is not a way you tell a story. And he's gotten away with it in games because games are long. But like you can't tell a coherent, even like half of a Metal Gear game. In a one movie. Like, it's impossible.
You can't have a coherent codec conversation from a Metal Gear game in a movie.
No, it's impossible.
I mean, but I could be wrong. Basically podcasts.
Because, like, I was trained to write movies. That was my... I took those courses in college. The things people are doing now, like, these people are way better than me. I can't even explain it. Everything happening with Sonic, Last of Us, and Fallout. Those are my three crown jewels. They're fucking beautiful.
I got going to use this as an opportunity to plug not one, but two things going on. So the Knuckles TV series actually comes out later this month, starring Idris Elba as Knuckles. He's reprising his role from the movie. It's going to be amazing. Adam Pally is in it, reprising his role from the movies.
Oh,
also
man.
Stars people like Cary Elwes is in this. Stalker Channing. Michael, I know you're a big Stalker Channing fan.
Michael, do your Stalker Channing.
You can never shut up about Grease. All he talks about all day off mic is fucking Grease. But the Knuckles series is going to be really, really good. The other series I'm looking forward to, because I love the people behind it, as there's a Golden Axe animated series that was just announced by the creator of Star Trek Lower Decks, if you've been watching that.
Amazing show.
Mike McMahon. This thing also, and one of the reasons I'm most excited, it features Danny Putty. He's playing a character. Community's Danny Putty is going to be in this thing. And Carl Tart. I love Carl Tart. I've heard him on a ton of podcasts. He's a funny, funny comedian. So, yeah.
Danny Putty is my favorite quote of any human being. I'm the center slice of a square cheese of pizza. You're Jim Belushi. That is such a good takedown you can use all the time.
So, yeah, of course, it's a series based on the Belt Scrollers. You know, Golden Axe, man. We love Golden Axe.
That's so weird to me, like it being done as a straight-up comedy. So I'm curious to see how that develops.
Wasn't Danny Putty in a Ubisoft comedy series? Wasn't he in that game dev series that you guys had?
I think he had a role in that, yeah.
Yeah, Mythic Quest.
Yeah.
But Golden Axe is right for comedy.
I mean, Golden Axe is like, why are you doing this as a comedy? It seems a little strange. But.
The really weird thing about it, I have not read about a Comedy Central greenlighting a series in years. Years. It's been years.
That wasn't 24 hours at The Office.
Yeah. South Park, The Office, Seinfeld, and then Jon Stewart comes on and does something.
Yeah.
Sega and play here. Take it with a grain of salt, whatever. But I'm excited about those projects.
No, there's perfect.
Yeah.
Golden Axe series is something I know, but I learned about backwards. It was already kind of at its apex before I was playing games.
Gilius Thunderhead. Great character name. Has always been a great character name.
Great character, too. It's always my favorite one to play as.
Death Adder instead of Death Subtractor.
Oh, okay. I always thought Adder like the snake, but yeah. He adds to death. That would be a punch in the gut.
Yeah, Metal Gear is a terrible idea is what I meant to convey, and that I saw that Firewatch was in the adaptation list. And, why? It's a great story that doesn't work outside of games, which I think is similar to
Perfectly
BioShock.
Perfectly told the way that game tells that story. But that's... Yeah. If it's not told the way that game's telling it, it's not that great a story. It's just kind of okay.
Yeah. Two people talk to each other on the radio from their Firewatch towers and don't really interact.
Slightly broken man goes to the mountain to become a fire watcher, meets this...
Yeah, I guarantee in the movie he fights the woman on the radio at the end.
On top of the fire watch tower.
Yeah.
Total Tubi thing. Spoken like a bunch of people who... Michael and I used to watch every video game adaptation that ever existed. And I just keep thinking about those clips of Rob Riggle I've seen... as Frank West for four seconds in a Dead Rising movie that may not exist. and
might have just been a fever dream.
I would absolutely watch that.
Whew. All right.
Let us know.
Yeah, what video game movie in development or in development hell are you most looking forward to? Let us know. Go to the official Laser Time community on Facebook. There'll be a thread there you can answer, or ping us on Twitter, Threads, or Blueski at VG Apocalypse, and we will read the answers on next week's show. That has been our show. Let's go with some plugs. What do you got?
Patreon.com/LaserTime, NeverEnding Story, and Monty Python, our thing we're talking about. Really, really fun stuff we couldn't cover on 302010. 302010, these next couple of weeks is so fucking fun. It's because if you never heard my story... I kind of liked movies, and then I saw Jurassic Park, and I saw every movie in the world after that. And it was pretty easy to see every movie for the next, 20 years, because it was only, 3 a week. And, I did. And it's a really interesting time. But 30-20-10, where we look at the world 30, 20, and 10 years ago, games too. I can't believe we were... JR is like, this game came out this week. I'm like, I don't know what to say, but I worked really hard on this game. That's 10 years ago. Holy shit. That's Dust Force.
Ah,
there you go. I'm just going to replug the Knuckles series. Check it out. A Knuck if you buck, as the kids say. The kids from 20 years ago.
What?
Say that.
All right.
It's a song.
I'm going to plug Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. It's a great game. Go buy it. I work for Ubisoft.
I might. The combat in that is still better than Blasphemous, but Blasphemous is more combat focused than anything else we mentioned. And that's why I've never wanted to retcon a top five before. But I still wouldn't, because the combat and the puzzles in Lost Crown are so good. Check it out.
All right.
But Blasphemous is on PS Extra. Oh, geez.
Plus something.
Yeah, PS
one
Plus
of, one
Extra.
Of those tiers.
Yeah.
But you're going to learn those one day.
Isn't it on Game Pass, too?
No.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
No? All right.
Game Passphemous.
Passphemous. Oh, I love it. As always, you can visit us at the official LaserTime Committee on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter, Threads, and Blueski at VG Apocalypse. You can follow me personally on those platforms at Wikiparaz, WikiParaz. That's been our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Don't buy steak at a Dollar Tree. What's wrong with you?